That's rock and roll.
Good evening. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the, is this on? Can you hear me back there?
Get it on.
It is on. Good. Welcome to the Tuesday, June 16th, 2009, Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. Before we begin our regularly printed agenda, we have a couple of quick matters. I'm going to go over to the podium for the first of them. First, I would like to ask Bing Rennick and Sandy Svoboda and Nancy Emsley, Kerry Farrington, Indy Vogel, and Greg Brousseau to come up to the podium with me. And I'd like to read a resolution and ask for a motion from the board. Whereas the Government Finance Officers Association is a nonprofit professional association serving 17,500 government finance professionals throughout North America, and whereas the GFOA's Distinguished Budget Presentation Award Program is the only national awards program in governmental budgeting, and whereas the Certificate of Achievement is the highest form of recognition in governmental accounting and financial reporting, and its attainment represents a significant accomplishment by a government and its management, and whereas the winning both awards represents a significant achievement by an entity, it reflects the commitment of the governing body and staff to meet the highest principles of government budgeting and financial reporting, and whereas in North Carolina, only 22 municipalities received the GFOA Distinguished Budget Award, and 69 municipalities received the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting, and only 21 municipalities received both awards, the town of Carborough has received the Budget Award for 6 years straight and Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting for 3 years. And whereas the employees of the Management Services Department of the town of Carborough, through their daily work, contribute to the town's overall solid fiscal position on behalf of the Carborough community, and now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Aldermen does hereby extend our personal recognition and thanks to L. Bingham Rennick, Assistant Town Manager, Sandy Svoboda, Purchasing Officer, Budget Analyst, Nancy Emsley, Accounting Officer, Jane Bowden, Accounting Technician, Tanya Counts, Staff Accountant, Kerry Farrington, Program Support Assistant, Linda Fry, Accounting Technician, Andy Vogel, IT Manager, and Greg Brousseau, IT Support Engineer, for their team spirit and tireless efforts in achieving these awards and for their day-to-day dedication in serving the town and the people of Carborough.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Yes.
And I would like to present here the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award from the GFOA. And that to you. And the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. So I want to say we hold our town staff at the town of Carborough to very high standards. We expect a lot from y'all, and we're proud to see when y'all deliver. And congratulations on those awards, and thank you for all you do for the town of Carborough.
Thank you.
All right.
We also have one other very special moment. Alderman Coleman, if you'll take the podium.
John Wellner, could you come up, please?
I hereby move the following resolution honoring John Wellner on the occasion of his retirement from the Art Center. Where Whereas John Wilner has been Executive Director of the Arts Center for the past 6 years. And whereas, under John's leadership and vision, the Arts Center has expanded its offerings to the community in nearly every genre of the arts. And whereas the Arts Center now touches over 60,000 people each year, including over 40,000 children, using both its facility in Carrboro and its programs at satellite facilities and schools. And whereas John is credited with taking the Arts Center from a $600,000 annual budget to nearly $1.5 million. And whereas John has been an ardent proponent of arts for children, has pursued the establishment of an arts magnet school in a new Arts Center building, and has led the development of children-focused programs, including the very successful Youth Performing Arts Conservancy. And whereas John generously donated his time to host a weekly radio show devoted to the arts on WCHL. And whereas John has served on numerous community boards of directors and is the town of Carrboro's representative to the Orange County Visitors Bureau. And whereas John has always been a tireless advocate for the Arts Center and the entire arts community throughout the area. And whereas John has been an exemplary citizen and community leader, known for his passion, energy, commitment, thoughtfulness, and humor. And whereas after a period of great personal challenge and loss, John is stepping down from his position effective June 30th, 2009. And whereas John will continue as interim executive director and subsequently work in community relations for the Arts Center. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Carrboro Board of Aldermen express our heartfelt appreciation for the service John Wilner has given to the Arts Center and to the Carrboro community, that we wish him health and happiness in the years ahead, and look forward to his continued contributions to sustaining the greater Carrboro area as a center for the arts.
Second.
All right. All those in favor of the motion, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Matter passed unanimously. John.
Dan, did you want to speak?
Just a couple little words. I think most people would recognize the Arts Center as one of the crown jewels.
Why don't you come up to a microphone? So yeah. People listening at home.
Use Bob's microphone right there.
This is Dan Crable, who's Secretary of the Board of Directors of the Arts Center.
Everybody hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I think most of us would recognize the Arts Center as one of the cultural crown jewels of Carrboro, and much of that credit over the last 6 years really goes squarely on John Wilner's shoulders. And both personally and professionally, as a member of the board, I really came here to do credit to him, and I appreciate very much the board of aldermen recognizing him tonight and supporting the Arts Center over many years. I don't know how many people are aware that when John came on board, it was trying times for the Arts Center, and in fact, we came very close 6 years ago to closing the doors to the Arts Center. So he's been through some very trying times. That may have caused some of the age in his whiskers up there to show up, but be that as it may, John, both a personal and from the Board of Directors, a well done thank you for all your work over the years.
Thanks, Jeff.
But most of the time, I wasn't sure who he was talking about. I am really moved by this. Thank you. The Arts Center is a jewel in the community, and it cannot remain that way without the support of the community. And so I would like to say to all of you, and to all of you, thank you very much for the support that you've given to me and the Arts Center over the last 6 years. I very much appreciate it. And also, I have to say, there's a couple of staff members here. It's really too bad it was such a last minute thing. I wish they were all here. I work with the most incredible group of talented, dedicated, intelligent, and passionate people that I could ever want. It's been an incredible ride for me for 6 years. The best job I've ever had. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, John.
I'm so afraid to be sticking around.
You've got to figure it out.
Okay. I have a number of folks signed up to speak on several items that are on the Board of Aldermen's agenda. Are there any folks who are here to speak on issues that are not on our agenda? Robert Dowling, if you would come to the podium, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Robert Dowling, Executive Director of Orange Community Housing and Land Trust, soon to be Community Home Trust. And I just handed out a petition. And the first thing I want to do is say I'm sorry that this was such a last-minute thing that I got it out over the weekend. I literally realized on Friday night about 5 o'clock that this was the last meeting and I needed to write this. And I wrote it for Friday night. And I want to apologize to the manager for not keeping him in the loop while I was thinking about this. But very simply, Alderman Coleman came to me with an idea that maybe it would be better to ask for developers to provide affordable housing in the ordinance at a lower percentage of median income, because the ordinance says 80%, and then we have to bring in subsidy to get it down to about 65 so we can have a window of people to sell it to. And getting that subsidy is always a problem, because you all have approved lots of developments, the Butler and the Alberta and Riverson and Claremont and Ballantyne, that have a lot of subsidy attached to them. And Dan thought of this idea, and I wish I had thought of it, but I didn't. He did, and I think it's a good one.
But simplicity is brilliant.
It really is. And just ask for developers to lower the price at which they sell them to us, it obviates the need for a subsidy, but they provide fewer units, because it wouldn't be fair to ask for the same number of units. So it's that simple. I know the staff has a ton of things to do over the summer. I'm just putting this out there as something we may want to look at between now and maybe the end of the year. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Robert.
That's a good suggestion. Thank you.
I move we refer this to staff.
Second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that the petition be referred to the town staff. We'll look forward to hearing back from you probably in the fall sometime. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager, I believe we are on our consent agenda.
Item one, approval of minutes of the previous meetings of June 2nd and June 9th. Item two is a request for an extension of a conditional use permit for the shops at Jones Ferry. Item three, a request for an extension of a conditional use permit for the Matthews Family Building. Item four, a request for an extension of a conditional use permit for the Alberta Mixed Use Project. Item five, a request for an extension of a conditional use permit for the Ballantyne AIS. Item six, a request for a minor modification to the Crown Castle Telecommunications Tower conditional use permit. Item seven, a request to approve designation of fund balance for fiscal year 2008-2009 budget items not yet spent or encumbered. Item eight, the approval of a municipal agreement with the North Carolina Department of Transportation for ARRA-funded projects. Item nine, a request to authorize the town manager to award a construction contract for the Vim and Ash Street sidewalk projects. Item 10, a request to approve a budget amendment. Item 11, a town code amendment accepting Rock Haven, Tar Hill Drive, and Renee Lynn Cordistown Streets. Item 12, a personnel ordinance change amending the town code to reflect the 5-year service requirement for the service level benefit award. Item 13, a request to approve a budget amendment. Item 14, a request to cancel the June 23rd public hearing. And item 15, a revolving loan fund request from Carborough Raw.
What's the items?
I think there were a couple of questions
and
on
number
some
five.
Of them.
Number
five. And
I'd like number eight. I'm sorry. Number eight, and then I have just a question that relates, but I don't really need to pull anything.
Question relating to which item?
Well, I just kind of wanted to know if there were any other CUPs coming up soon, particularly the Butler and the Roberson, where because
in terms of anticipated requests for extensions?
Yeah, for extensions, if there were any others. And I feel like those two are close, but
So move all the items with exception of 5 and 8.
And actually, can I ask that we vote separately on item 9 as well?
And 9.
Okay, so items 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7,
10,
10 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 have been moved.
Second.
And seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Could you address Jackie's
sure.
question?
There's a smaller batch of them, you're correct, that are kind of, I guess, the next wave where we did some approvals, you know, three mm-hmm. or four in a row. We have before you tonight all of the ones that would come due or expire, as it were, very soon after the you come back from your break. Mm-hmm. The next batch would expire late fall or early the following year. So it is very possible
That's
we'll have
I
some
thought.
More sometime in the fall.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Questions about item 5, a potential extension for...
Yeah, well, I want to make an alternate motion, which is that we extend the Ballantyne for 6 months, as suggested by the attorney, so that we can see what progress we make on the Northern Small Area Plan, and that in doing so, that we ask staff to convey to the developer that we would look favorably upon a modification to put some small area of commercial, probably along Old 86, if they were interested in that, and also that the work that's being done on the Northern Small Area Plan include the possibility of rezoning this property to a mixed use, should it not be further extended under the CUP. That's my motion.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Are there representatives from the Ballantyne AIS project here?
For Ballantyne?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Do you want to make any comment on that?
I'm Jeremy Medlin. I'm Vice President of Land Development for MI Homes Raleigh. We have owned or been looking at this project since 2002. That's when we actually started sketch plans, and we started the CUP process or preparing for the CUP in 2004. I came to MI Homes 4 years ago, and then I became involved in the project. And, you know, we've worked as hard as we possibly can, you know, trying to work through issues associated with the site and buffers and whatnot. And what I believe that we have now today is a very good plan. We are a single-family and townhome home builder. Just recently we got into the townhome business. It's about 3 years ago. So to switch gears now and do something with a commercial piece, it's really not our expertise. It's not something we would choose to do. And given how many years we've been working on this project, we would think or consider it to be unfair to ask us to redo the CUP and spend another 2 or 3 years preparing the CUP to do something that we're really not cut out or, you know, have the ability to do. If the economic downturn had not occurred when it did, you know, I have every belief that we would have been on the project, we would have been actively developing it, and hopefully starting structures by now, and have homes underway. And that being said, that's what I'd like to appeal to you. I'd like to ask you, you know, this is not a faceless company, you know, all the employees at MI Homes, this, you know, we all stand to benefit from this. And by benefit, I mean, you know, to have active employment and to keep our jobs and to have a place to go every day. We're not set up to do commercial development or commercial spaces. I'd just like to point that out. And I'd like to ask you guys to be as fair as possible.
Yes,
do you know when you do you have a timeline when you might be able to anticipate starting your development?
We Jeremy Finch is with McAdams, and we worked on this project until the fall of 2008, and then, given the downturn, we had to stop. I mean, it just literally got to a point where we had spent so much money, and we felt like we still had a ways to go. I mean, we were addressing the second review comments. We would still end up having to spend enough money where we really could not continue to pay our subcontractors, you know, the fees. And so we had to put it on hold. Now, I will tell you this. We are seeing the pulse. The pulse is coming back. In January, we started picking up something. January, February, March, April, these have all been good months. And I would like to think that I could put him back to work, McAdams back to work on the plans, you know, in another 2 or 3 months.
The motion we're considering would give you 6 months, and you can come back and apply for another 6-month extension at the end of that time. So.
Well,
we're still in business.
Right. What I'm concerned about, though, is if you give me 6 months and it takes me another 3 or 4 months to get my CDs, my construction drawings approved, then I've got a piece of property that technically is approved on paper, but that puts me going into the winter months and trying to, you know, get the 10 or 20% of the site developed throughout the winter. And I really don't think you guys want me, you know, denuding a large area and playing around in the mud, you know, in that area at that time.
I understand your frustration. I understand your concern from a town perspective.
Right.
I don't know if you really want people moving in to your development who are going to have to drive to everything that they go to, everything. And I think, you know, you're in the business, you understand the trends, and that the trends are away from that and more towards people being able to at least shop close to where they live. And you understand that one of the reasons we're having the problem in our economy has to do with fuel and all of that. So we're trying to plan for things to be better. And I don't think that you're being asked to build a strip mall. In fact, I know you're not being asked to build a strip mall, but a small, you know, something small, like not much bigger than a house, that would provide some kind of commercial activity, some little shopping, some kind of community gathering. So I don't think that would really take another year or several years. It actually shouldn't. It's more along the lines of Johnny's down the street from here, if you're familiar with Johnny's.
Not been to Johnny's.
Yeah.
Well, when you leave here, drive down Main Street.
Drive down Johnny's.
Check it out. It looks like a house. Yeah. It's got two shops downstairs, an apartment upstairs.
We're not asking you to build a shopping center. We don't want you to build a shopping center. We just want some small neighborhood commercial, like combination coffee shop, grocery store, have music there. Just kind of, but it's not huge. That's certainly not the suggestion. So, but I with that said, I'll support Dan's motion.
Okay. So, Mr. Attorney, there's a certain amount of extension of these permit applications that we're allowed to do.
Right. I think the LUO says you can extend it for up to a year, so you don't have to go that full year. I mean, Alderman Coleman's motion is in order to extend it to 6 months.
Does the LUO address the number of extensions that are available?
I have to check on the section.
But I guess what I'm saying is, if it says you can do up to 2 extensions of up to a year, then effectively to extend it for 6 months now would actually reduce the amount of total extension that they're potentially available.
It could, yes. I mean, if you're 2 extensions up to 2 years, I mean, the question is, could you do the second extension for 18 months if the first extension is for 6 months?
So can you take a look at the ordinance and give us an opinion on that?
Yeah, unless Mr. Hornick corrects me, it seems to read successive extensions may be granted for periods of up to 1 year upon the same findings. I don't see a maximum.
You don't see a limit, yeah.
Right.
Unless he sees something I'm not seeing.
Okay, so you're saying it could, there's nothing that says you can only do two extensions.
Right, there's no express limitation on the number of extensions that could be granted.
So we could grant another extension 6 months from now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If I may speak just for a moment, I guess, before we just to add some thoughts from my perspective. I'm Jeremy Finch with the John McAdams Company, and I've this project, as Jeremy mentioned, originated our company in 2002, and we've started with the CEP process in 2004, and that's when I came on board on this project, and ultimately got the CEP approval in 2007. And I think, just to echo some of the things that Jeremy, you know, has already said, back during the CEP approval process, some of these very issues about density, and I believe the suggestion was even made to have us relook at potentially rezoning the property as a part of the CEP public hearings. And a lot of those issues were discussed, and I guess what we kind of felt like were addressed to the point where we, you know, received the CEP approval at that time. And, you know, at that point, there had been a lot of, you know, time and dollars invested in to get the CEP approval. And, you know, when you get the CEP approval, I guess, you know, you feel like, all right, we're safe to move forward with the plan that we have on paper. And as Jeremy mentioned, unfortunately, you know, we started the construction drawings soon after CEP approval. The CEP was approved in August 07. We were working on CDs in October, and we were full bore, so made a CD submittal to the town engineer in January of 08, got CD comments, and we're moving forward with the plan that you see on the paper, and went and even submitted second round construction drawings, and we were, you know, nearing the end of what we felt like was the, you know, drawing to closure on the CD approval process. We were very close and may have achieved it with the next submittal. And unfortunately, as Jeremy referenced with the, you know, the deteriorating economy, I don't think we have to mention anything about that. Everybody's experiencing the pain. We stopped at that time. And, you know, unfortunately, I guess we kind of feel like this issue is coming up. We're just trying to get an extension on the CEP to pick up, you know, where we left off. And start right back in the CD, you know, right here at the end of the CD approval process, and to change, you know, uses on the property when we've already engineered, you know, portion of all of the property and we're very close to approval. I mean, that would you know, flush down the toilet, for lack of a better word, some engineering design on that portion of the project. And I just kind of feel like some of these same, this is the same issue that came up in the CEP approval process, and it was approved, the CEP, and right. We're just respectfully asking for an extension to really pick up on where we left off.
Let me just make a point that, you know, where we are today, none of us expected to be where we are today, and today is not 2004 or 2006. And given what we know about the northern study area, the reason why an extension makes so much sense to me is that it gives us a time to look at what our NSA findings are, but it also gives you a chance to come up with a creative way to address not only what we the town needs, but what that northern study area is clamoring for, and what will sell, because it's very true that folks, you know, north of Homestead, you know, they are looking for some viable commercial, but they want that commercial to be integrated into neighborhoods. So, you know, it's with an eye towards how things have changed and how we all need to be creatively, flexibly looking at changes. You know, things are not static, and where we were 4 years ago or even 2 years ago is not where we are today or where we will be in the next 2 years. And it has to do with energy, it has to do with consumption, but it also, by looking at the, you know, an extended period of time, to step back gives us all a chance to look and to, you know, plan more effectively for the future.
Question to Dan, who will make the motion. I second it. Dan, your motion in any way restricts, makes it conditional, contingent upon being commercial, right? It just It's up to 6 months and encourage them to go commercial.
Six-month extension.
Okay.
I just to make sure we're all clear what the motion is, that this is what Alderman Herrera was just talking about. The motion that's on the table would give you until February 28th, 2010, essentially, to move forward with your plan that's approved right now. And if you can't do that, either to come back with an alternative plan or to ask for a further extension. So your 6 month isn't measured from today. It's measured from the expiration of the existing CUP, which doesn't expire until 2.5, almost 3 months from now. So this is not like we're not counting 6 months from today. I just want to make sure you understand that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Attorney or Marty, whoever, or both of you, if hypothetically the developer chose to incorporate some small commercial element in their plan in the future, as some people have discussed here, would that be something that would require them to start completely over with an entirely new conditional use permit application, or is that something that could potentially be done? I mean, they're basically, these folks are talking about something that's more or less of a coffee shop or something like that. Is that, or is that something that could be done more, you know, minor modification?
They would need a rezoning.
Well, right. Sure, but I'm saying, but the rezoning part of it doesn't necessarily have to take that long.
Yeah, I was actually kind of thinking about that as you were discussing it over the last few minutes, and I guess it's conceivable that if they were able to, and I don't know, this is all hypothetical, but if they were able to design in an area that could be utilized as commercial within the, to a large degree within the existing stormwater system that is designed there, that is to say, wherever they put down commercial, that it would could be constructed in such a way that it drains where the houses were already going to drain, mm-hmm. and the impervious surface, comparing the houses to what would be done as commercial, is roughly the same, then I think it's conceivable it could be done in, you know, without what would seem to be starting over. But that's really hypothetical and hard to say. I'm not an engineer by training, and it's and difficult to say.
And obviously, it would depend on the scale of the change at some level. But okay, yeah. Well, I'll just say it doesn't. I don't think it would be fair, particularly to ask them to start completely over on a lengthy process that they've been engaged in good faith. So I guess I'm willing to vote for the extension, but I don't, and I think it would be nice if they did incorporate a small commercial component into the development, but I'm not gonna personally be looking to ask them to, you know, really dramatically revamp their proposal.
And I agree with the points that Mark made. If there's a way that you can work it in, look at it, that's fine. This project was approved several months before I even joined the board, so I know it's been in the works for many, many, many years. And it just kind of emphasizes our concern that we all have with our Northern Study Area plan, that anything that's coming through the hopper now, you know, people almost need to be on notice. You know, anything in the northern area, we're really looking at some kind of way of mixing commercial, even though we don't have it on the books yet. We're talking about it. Anything that's starting to make its way through that process, developers need to be aware that that's what we're looking for.
And I'll just take note of the fact that the Blocker property, which is about, I think, two or three properties to the south of this project and on Old 86 there, was apparently put up for sale within the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so whoever's looking at that might want to take note of this conversation. Mm-hmm. All right. The motion is to grant a six-month extension of the permit. All those, and it was seconded, I believe, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously.
I want to make one further comment, not to do with the motion particularly, but I think this thing about, well, you know, they shouldn't have to do extra work or whatever, you know, that's kind of like what the president is saying to the insurance companies and why we're thinking we're not going to get very far in health care reform. I mean, at some point, I feel like it's the job of this board to say, okay, you know, we approved this under the existing rules at that time, but we've been reviewing those rules for 3 years now. These issues were raised with you at the public hearing. There was no, we couldn't enforce them because we didn't have the zoning and the ordinance in place at the time, but we're going to put them in place because we want a different kind of development in that area. And I think if we want it, that we owe it to the citizens to look for opportunities to obtain that if we can. So.
And all I'm saying is I think it's important that with, for example, the Blocker property, which is now for sale, that we be really clear with anybody who's looking at that property that probably something of that nature will be expected on there, if nowhere else. All right. Did we already vote?
Yeah.
Great.
I asked to have eight pulled. Real quick.
Item number eight.
Real quick. That's the sidewalks. Neighbors cool with that?
No, this eight is municipal agreement with NCDOT for ARR.
For construction of the Ash and Bim Street sidewalk projects.
Oh, that's nine.
That's nine.
That's nine. No, it's both of them.
Oh, is it both of them?
Mm-hmm.
It was eight and nine.
Oh, I see.
Nine.
Yeah,
they're tied together. Yeah.
It's both of them. Just because I'm cute doesn't mean I'm dumb. So we're no. It is both of them. But so my question is, are the neighbors cool with the sidewalk projects on Ash and Bim?
I'll ask George if he's got any specific comments to make. These are ones that you'll recall were in the original list of projects.
Just because they're in the original list doesn't mean that we don't
hear. And you've been involved in negotiation, I think, George, for some right-of-way on these.
Yeah, Steve mentioned this. This goes back to the original list, and, of course, we had two meetings, public meetings, regarding the project.
Right.
The initial meeting to get ideas from them, and then the second meeting to present a preliminary plan. After that, the neighbors had a chance as part of the process to object to the projects and so forth, and we did not receive any objections.
Great. Okay.
So the plan is to proceed.
An attempted protest petition, or whatever you call it, for Ash Street was organized, but it did not get enough signatures on it to qualify as a genuine protest against it. And all the people who signed onto the protest were the folks who are on the side of the other side from where the sidewalk is proposed to actually be built. Go figure that one out. Mm. But anyway, I had suggested that item nine be pulled because I happen to be one of the property owners adjacent to the Ash Street sidewalk, and I'd like to ask the board to recuse me from voting on, I guess, 8, 9, and 10.
All right.
I want to ask the attorney about that first. I mean, does this, being on a street where we're putting in a sidewalk, does that really rise to the level of constituting?
Well, I'm not sure that it really rises to the level of conflict of interest, but I always try to caution my boards, if it doesn't feel right to one of the board members to participate in a case like this, it's probably not a bad idea for him to be excused from voting on it.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
All right.
Move the items.
Second.
Item number 5, 8, 9.
Five's already been passed. 8, 9.
That's right. 8, 9, 10.
All right. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Come on back.
Come back down.
We missed you.
I didn't even get to hear this once.
Okay. Then did we have anything else from the dissent agenda?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Other matters. The adoption of the 2008-2009 fiscal year budget. Mr. Manager, is there any further comment from the staff on this budget?
No, we've got department heads here. Of course, I'm here. If the board has any questions, we're happy to try to respond.
Go ahead.
I had a quick question about the fees and charges, and it was with regard to ongoing discussions that we've had on the board about road races, and for, to, it was my thinking that we always ask, did we recover 100% of direct costs? And it was my understanding we usually, we do, and so it says attempt to recover, and then above and beyond that, which I understand might still need to be something to come back in the future, is whether we charge some kind of a fee for profit road racing.
I think we do recover the direct cost. I think the question for the board is, do you want us to look at the possibility of some sort of flat fee for these for-profit road races in addition to the direct cost? Because
yeah.
There certainly are indirect costs involved in all of these.
Well, I, you know, if it is the case that we do recover 100%, I would just say let's just take off attempt to.
I think that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. And I would submit, I know we've talked about for the profit ones, just investigating what a typical fee would be to charge for something like that.
How many for-profit races are there over the course of a year?
Do you know, George?
Bear with me here a moment.
While George is looking, I also suggest that we as staff have an opportunity to talk with some of these road race sponsors, particularly for the for-profits, to really look at some of the impacts on the community, because I think some of the traffic issues from some of the ones this past year wound up tying up traffic a good bit more than the 5 or 10 minutes mm-hmm. that we were told on some of those.
Of the, I think, five or six races that we have, there are only two that are for-profit. Cargo Classic and the Tar Heel 10-miler. Okay. And if I may add that these folks, all of them pay an application fee, a $60 application fee, so that's another charge that you're probably not aware of when we talk about recouping costs. They also pay for any of the advertisements as well, which is a direct cost.
Okay. Other budget questions?
Steve, do we need to move each of these five items separately? Like, do we need five motions
on
the items A through E that are the attachments?
I don't think so. Let me take a quick glance. I think you could just make a motion that will approve all those resolutions, unless you prefer to do them separately.
Okay. Move all the resolutions.
Second.
With the change suggested, presumably, by Lydia.
Yeah.
Right.
Was that a suggested change, or was that?
Yeah, just take off.
Attempt.
Oh, yes, yeah. With the change suggested by Alderman Lavelle.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded for the 2009-2010 proposed budget with one minor alteration. Before we vote, let me just say I know that I speak for the entire Board of Aldermen, and I think for the great majority of taxpayers of the town of Carrboro, Mr. Manager, when I say that we're grateful for your Scottish heritage and approach to municipal budgeting. This is a very difficult financial year, not only for local and state governments, but for lots of individual families and households in our community. And we really appreciate your finding a way to bring us a budget that's operating off of the equalization rate for the tax rate for next year. And I say that directly to you, but I'm saying it also directly to, I think, a dozen department heads and many people in every department of town government who have searched out ways to keep the cost of town government as low as we possibly can while still meeting the high expectations of the people of the town of Carrboro.
I appreciate you saying that, and I do want to add that it's really a team effort. It's the folks in this room and their, you know, 130 or 40 other folks who really all together helped to put this together and make it happen on behalf of the community. And we appreciate the guidance that you all provided in putting it together as well.
All right.
Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of the budget as slightly amended?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Saying aye. All those opposed? The matter passed unanimously. Thanks very much. All right. With that, we will turn to an update from the planning staff regarding concerns, discussion with farmers regarding concerns about or possible concerns about town regulations. Mr. Manager?
And we do have Roy Williford, our planning director, is pinch hitting tonight to give you all an overview. Trish McGuire, planning administrator, is dealing with an illness in her family, so Roy has had to substitute at the last minute. So kudos to Roy for putting together some information pretty quickly. And Roy, if you could give the board a brief overview about what's been going on, and then okay. Turn it back over to the board.
See if I can find the little slide. Okay. Okay. This item, again, as I mentioned, is with regard to a discussion with the farmers on concerns about the town regulations. The basic background on this item is, just to give you a little history, is that back in October of 08, during a public hearing on the Keeley WR subdivision, the aldermen were asked several questions related to farming and farm regulations. And following that, in January of 09, responses to the questions were provided to the board of aldermen. And on April 2nd, Sharon Cook, who's a planning board member, shared with the rest of the planning board her interest in pursuing a text amendment to allow farm apartments in the WR watershed zoning district. And then following that, on May 7th, Ms. Cook requested that the planning board sponsor the amendment. 14 citizens offered comments, and the planning board decided not to pursue the text amendment, but to schedule a discussion of the possible farm code in the near future so as to better understand farming and the comments they have heard. Discussion was scheduled for May 21st. Then on May 17th, the planning board chair, Matthew Barton, was invited to meet with the local farmers, which he did, and he prepared a summary of the meeting, which I believe is in your packet. And on May 19th, the board of aldermen decided to schedule a meeting with the farmers to discuss concerns about the regulations, which brings us to tonight's meeting on having this general discussion. Some of the questions that just summarize those questions from the farmers. One has been, are there any intentions to create Carver-specific rules applying to fertilization of farmland? And this item came up before our board when we were looking at regulating fertilizers only within the town limits. And some of that was misconstrued. And next was, are there any intentions to prohibit or otherwise limit livestock on farms within Carver's jurisdiction? I believe the only limitation would be, again, if the farm was actually located in city limits and the town code at that time would prevail. And I believe that that would be 1 acre per livestock. Ability to house laborers, farm families, apprentices, or any other people useful to continue with farm operations in a changing marketplace. This item dealt with that's whether or not farmers would have the ability to have farm workers reside within their properties. There's several different twists on that, but the basic answer would be within the University of Lake Watershed, that limits one unit per lot. And so if you wanted to have more than one unit, so if it requires a 5-acre minimum lot size, for instance, you would need to have 10 acres and put one unit on each one. another thing to look at would be the definition of a unit. A housing unit, of course, would be considered one having a living quarters containing kitchen, bedroom, and kitchen, bedroom, and bathroom. So, for instance, if it did not have all those facilities, then it would not be considered a unit. Meaning that, for instance, if there were just sleeping quarters with a bathroom, that would not be considered a unit. However, if it had the kitchen along with that, it would be a unit. Number four, ability to subdivide land as an ongoing process. Again, this, before I get too far from the other, if the farm is not located in the University of Lake Watershed, then the unit potential would be regulated by the underlying, the other underlying zoning. For instance, if it were in the RR, it'd be one unit per acre. Or the R20, you would have 20,000 square feet per unit. Ability to subdivide land is an ongoing process over many years. This would be regulated depending on the zone that you're in the University of Lake Watershed. Since that was set up, it was allowed to have, if it were subdivided prior to 1990, then they would be allowed to have up to 5 2-acre lots. And for instance, if you had 10 acres, you could have those 5 lots. If you had 100 acres, you could have the one, 10 of that 100 acres could have up to 5 2-acre lots. And the remaining 90 acres would be 5 acres per lot. Outside of the watershed, it would be just a regular density of, say, one unit per acre. So if you had 100 acres, you would have 100 units. There was another twist or caveat on this, that if one did have, for instance, 10 acres and they came in and subdivided, say if it were created prior to 1990, and they subdivided off 2 acres from that and wanted to come back later and have additional subdivision, there'd need to be a notation placed on the plan which would give them the ability to subdivide again later so they could get the total of 5. And 5, Wild and Carver gains the right to regulate farms by having an ETJ, which is extraterritorial planning jurisdiction. Did it not create a farm code which would make clear the rules for farmers so they do not have to worry about possible changes in town rules? My knowledge, I believe the ETJ was, or the extraterritorial planning jurisdiction was created around both Chapel Hill and Carver back in the early 50s. And at that time, it was pretty much a practice that most places, the statutes would establish the ETJ. Many places would be able to go, say, if it were had a population under 2,500, could go a mile beyond their city limits, or if it had more than 10,000 people, 2 miles. But around Chapel and Carver, it was basically a large rectangle that was placed around the two towns. Eventually, the towns grew out, both Chapel and Carver, outside of those ETJs and found it necessary to work with the county to establish a joint planning area, which is located primarily to the north of town. And properties within the joint planning area still retain the ability to have the farm exemptions in that area because it is outside of our ETJ and city limits. So that gives just some basic rundown of some of those items. I think there's some maps that were included in here which give you an idea of where the use value properties are located within our jurisdiction. This is a northern portion of our jurisdiction, north of Homestead Road, south of Eubanks, and you can see there's the properties that are shown in green are those that are considered to be in use value.
Roy, it's
so they're within town limits.
it was in the town limits, and this particular shot, no, there's not any within the town limits.
Those are in our, in other words, those are in our extraterritorial jurisdiction, but they're not town limits.
These are in the joint planning area.
Right.
And so these properties would still retain that farm exemption.
And just to clarify, I know, I'm sure all the farmers in the crowd do, but know obviously what the use value program is. But for listeners at home who may not be familiar with that, that's the folks who qualify for a special tax status they're operating farms.
Right.
Okay. And on that slide, are any of those green properties in the University Lake watershed?
No.
Okay. So in terms of building a farm worker housing or that type of thing, they're not restricted particularly from doing that. And most of those properties, I believe, are zoned for one, or in a few cases, probably two units per acre. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Most all of these would be in the RR, which would be one unit per acre.
I believe some of that down near Homestead Road.
Some of this would be R. I think R15 or.
So which is more like almost three units.
Yeah.
Per acre. Okay.
And the, one other thing, let me go. I forgot to do that. The city limits is shown in with the red, little red line here. The and it also goes down Rogers Road in this direction, and then down along Sewell, to Sewell, and then on the western boundary of the high school property.
Okay.
But Roy, to ask the question kind of in reverse, that there are no properties within the Carborough town limits that have a farm use value?
Not on this particular slide.
Not on this slide. Okay. Right. Okay.
Continue on. Sorry.
Okay. Now on this slide, this in Winsome Lane, there are, I think, about four or five lots located in there which are in the city limits and have a use value. And the Lloyd track, T. Lloyd's property up there off 54,
right.
That's in the city limits.
Uh-huh.
And as well as P.H. Craig property, that's outside the city limits, but it's in the northern transition area. So it would just be these, the ones in up around Winsome Lane and off 54.
Those are in
the city limits.
In the city limits of Carborough, so they would be affected by fertilizer rules.
Right. So it's greater than 2 acres.
The three of them over on Winsome Lane are going to be in the University Lake watershed, so
right.
they would be affected by
the WR, the Watershed Residential Zoning District.
Zoning district.
Yeah.
But those are that whole area right there has already been subdivided,
yes.
Has it not?
Yes.
15 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
Has it been that long?
Yes.
Something like that, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's several. this area, which is located west of Old Fable Road, I know some of the Laycock properties, et cetera, in that area, are in the University Lake watershed. They are not in the city limits.
So it looks like I'm seeing about five different properties there.
Yeah, they are in the ETJ, which is this line here.
Okay. So those are the five properties for which you could not build an accessory apartment without for a farm worker or for anybody else without subdividing the lot.
Without having a separate lot.
Okay. Or in other words, you only allowed
one
dwelling unit per lot in the watershed.
Residential district. Right?
Watershed residential district.
Mm-hmm.
But you could subdivide your lot if you wanted to, depending on the size and when it was established and so forth,
but the rest of those lots you could.
Everything but Winsome Lane. The Winsome Lane properties really can't. I mean, they've already been subdivided a few years ago.
They've already taken advantage.
All the other ones you can do those.
All that on the west side of Fayetteville Road and on north off the edge of the mountain.
You can do the accessory housing.
Right.
Yes.
It's not an issue for
those. Right. Okay. So we got five properties where
that are
in the farm use value program that are affected by that.
All right. And then we go further south.
Okay. Keep going. Sorry.
And this is all of our jurisdiction. This is going all the way down to the Chatham County line near the Star Point area. As reference, we were previously looking at the Laycock Farm area up here. This is James Ferry Road here. Mm-hmm. University of Lake is in this big place here. And so there's several lots. These are exempt subdivisions. This is an exempt subdivision that created 10-acre lots probably about, I'm guessing, 10 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. So if they did not have the notation on there, then they would be limited to the five, because they would have been developed after the 1990 deadline.
Okay.
The other properties that I'm aware of, I haven't looked at all the dates, but I think they've been in existence for a pretty good while, down off of Damascus.
And that's like the Womble Farm and a couple others.
Right.
Down there on Smith Level Road. Okay.
And I think there are a total of 44 farms, something like that.
In the jurisdiction. The entire jurisdiction, right. Including those up in the...
And is it five or six that are in town limits?
If they're within
town limits, it's like six, I think, is what the attorney.
Right, there was, yeah, the, yeah, these here.
Three in Winsome Lane.
Off Winsome Lane, and then these lots right here, which is the former T. Lloyd track.
Those are two different tracks, but it's really one
right.
Operation there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any questions?
There will be.
I'll leave it to the questioners. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I have a couple of people who are signed up to speak on this, so I'm going to call y'all up in the order that you're signed up here. We use this little egg timer right here to keep track of 3 minutes, and we ask you to keep your comments to 3 minutes when you come up to the podium. Out of respect for everybody's time. So the first person signed up is Gene Austin. Yes, please, if you would. That way people watching at home can hear you and see you.
Okay, well, first I want to thank you all for having this opportunity to have the interaction between the farmers and the Board of Aldermen. And I wanted to really speak in support of farms, but also in support directly of your taking the time and considering these very important questions. I think we all really value our farms as buffer zones, as contributing to the quality of the life we have generally. And I would just urge you to use this opportunity to create a farm code. It's been at least 21 years since extraterritorial jurisdiction covers these 44 farms. These farms open their gates to us every year, and we all love the farmers market, and I think we want to support the farms, and I think we can do this, and I think this is the beginning of a good basis to create a viable farm code that lets the people who operate farms know what the rules are, know where they stand. I think we all want to have government that serves the people, and I think this is a good way to do that, to create a farm code. These farms have been there for generations, and I think it's a necessary thing to create a farm code and to be creative with it and to encourage these farms to continue. I spoke on behalf of the text amendment because I'm not a farmer, I'm not related to anybody who has a farm, but it seems to me that having some sort of facility for people to live on the farm, particularly when they have large animals, is beneficial and is a safety concern. And again, I think this is one of the situations where there's been some controversy, and I think anytime there's a controversy, it's sort of like a fire. You have a lot of heat, but you also have a lot of light. And I think this is a chance to use the light to look at this question and really come out with a viable farm code that is a benefit to the community and also a benefit to the people who are already there with their farms. So I applaud you for that. And I think this is the beginning of a very constructive process here. And I urge all to pass a farm code.
Ms. Austin, if I could just ask you, what kind of elements would you picture being a part of that farm code? Because in other words, we have a land use ordinance that applies to extraterritorial jurisdiction now, and I'm wondering what kind of, you know, it would be helpful to me to know what specifically the shortcomings
of
that are.
Well, a specific question, I guess, because I have large animals. I have horses. And frankly, I only have three, but I can't leave without making preparation for them. Mm-hmm. And I know people have farm animals, need to have somebody living there mm-hmm. to take care of their animals. And I think it's also a safety and health issue. And it seems to me that would encourage farms to exist that we all enjoy, to have a way to have somebody on the facility, you know, whose responsibility includes taking care of the farm and taking care of animals. Mm-hmm. So that was really the specific thing that I thought would be a good thing to set out, be very specific about that. I would caution anybody trying to create a farm code is there's always sort of the parade of imagined horribles, like if you let people have, you know, an apartment on their farm, it's going to turn into a complex. And that's simply not so. I think you can legislate that, you know, which sounds like you've done, to limit what's available for people to have a facility for people to live there as tenants or as employees, of the farm. I think you can limit that. You don't have to worry about people mm-hmm. building more than one apartment, because I think you can limit that, and I think that would be a constructive thing to do.
Okay, thank you. That's kind of input. The next person signed up is Stephen Crabtree.
Good evening. My name's Stephen Crabtree. I was born and raised in this area. From all my life, and I live on my grandfather's farm, his old farm, out on Smith Level Road. And I've spoken to some of you before. I spoke with Ms. Williamson this morning, and also Roy over there, and he helped me, and I appreciate all that you did for me this morning. I know you were real busy, but you got me a lot of information, some of the stuff that they've already gone over here tonight. And I've got an extended family that have farms in these areas here. And talking with them, we've got concerns about how the farm code would be worded. That was one of the things that we pleaded with the planning board to put more input into it before it came to you, so that we could, you know, we'd know what was going on before it just sort of fell on us. And some of the things that we were concerned about, what Mr. Wilford had gone over with, was at this time, farms that are not in the watershed don't have to deal with these subdivision regulations. They can basically go in, and if a family member wants to put a house on the farm, they can put it on there without subdividing. But because of the codes that were written back in 1982 for Orange County, and I think he said Chatham and possibly Durham too, they decided that to protect the watershed, they would put these restrictions on to basically protect the watershed. Mm-hmm. But the thing that we've got concerns with is, and we'd appreciate y'all's, you know, thought of this, is that there are some of these properties that are very large. And if a family member wanted to come in and say put a house, you know, like a son wanted to put his house on there so he could help with the farming. Mm-hmm. If they've got the amount of land that it wouldn't affect because of the impervious surface, the runoff, if it would allow for that, then to do that without having to go through these subdivision regulations. Mm-hmm. That was some of the concerns. And, of course, Mr. Wilford has gone over some of the other ones that I was going to talk about. We're just hoping that y'all will level the playing field between the people that are the farmers that are not in the watershed and the ones that are. Thank you.
That's very concisely put. Thank you, Mr. Crabtree. Kelly Blackwood.
I want to appreciate y'all giving me an opportunity to speak tonight.
A little background on myself. My family's been in Orange County around 250 years, and all of them have been farmers of some kind. Now it's just me and my dad left, and I'm an 11th generation farmer. Farming's been a part of our life, of all those generations. I'm farming about 200 acres, 70 of which are in the Transition 1 area. Farm is my life. I farm grain, some vegetables, got cows, chickens, pigs, goats, hay, aquaculture, timber. We've tried a little bit of all elements of farming. And I have seen farming as a livelihood disappear in this community. It's happening everywhere. It's not just here. Farming has become a lifestyle choice now. All these farms, all of them in this area, they're getting outside income from somewhere. Spouse is working, selling land, rental income, land sales, sideline businesses. You just can't make money farming in this area just due to a variety of reasons. These include, you got your mega farms. They're not around here, but they got lobbyists and they set regulations and stuff, and it affects us. They want us out of business. Farmers are aging and they're not replacements. They're just not. Land costs are way too high to start new farms. Anybody here heard of a new farm anywhere other than a giant farm, just consolidate a bunch of them? There are no new small farms. It's not happening. You got to have 11 acres to do it if you're going to live on it, and that's just prohibitive to try to do that. So the farm is all being developed, and on top of this, you got regulations, you got restrictions, and it's tough. So there are not going to be any more new farms near Carrboro. That's not going to happen. And there's a real important question you'll have to consider, and it is, do you want to just tolerate these 40-some farms here? Let them stay there, die out, get developed, get broken up? Or do you want farming in perpetuity in this area? And I'm talking about small farms. My personal opinion, if you want to have a cow on an acre, you ought to be able to do it in your farm. But the state says you got to have 11 acres. You have 10 acres and one for the house to do that. And that's going to limit the number of people who can be farmers. If Carrboro does want to protect and preserve these farms in its extraterritorial jurisdiction, how about the ETJ? y'all are going to have to sacrifice. That means tax money. You're not going to be able to develop and get the tax money. It means that open spaces and greenways, they're going to be limited because all this pretty land is going to be privately owned. It's going to mean that you're going to have to resist the urge to overregulate. The state controls us and tells us what to do. The county tells us what to do. My dad tried to get an area and farm going through the county, and it was a pain jumping through hoops just to try to get to be a farm. And I think a farm code could be a good thing or it could be a horrible thing. And it'd be a lot more red tape, a whole lot more restrictions. You're also going to have to really come out and support the private property rights of these individual farmers and not get anything out of it. We're a real small minority, and all we got something, you get something pretty to look at when you drive by, but there's not a lot. We just can't, because of our numbers, contribute a whole lot. And also, it will be very important to maintain this dialogue that you're having with farmers, and that's a real seed of hope, that we are able to talk. The cynic in me is saying this, you know, it's platitudes and all this about protecting and preserving. We'll be having the same talk 20 years from now. I'll be here, I hope, you know, but there won't be 40 farms in 20 years. I know that. There'll be a lot more other things, but not farms. And the cynic in me says there's not going to be a real sincere attempt to protect and preserve the farmland that's in Carrboro. But I'm a glass half full kind of guy. I'm an optimist, and so I'm not paying attention to that voice. And I really do want to believe that Carrboro is a pro-farming community, and it does want to keep this important part, keep it viable, keep it alive, so that I'm not the last, that one day there'll be a 12th generation farmer in Carrboro. Mm-hmm.
appreciate y'all giving me a chance to talk.
All right, thank you, Kelly. Mayling Blackwood?
Mayling Blackwood, Carrboro, Transition 1. Time. Time is so precious, especially tonight with 3 minutes. And I know your time is precious, and that there are many issues and needs that Carrboro faces and that you guys have to deal with. And so that being said, being efficient is absolutely critical with the amount of time that's allotted. There are so few farms in the Carrboro jurisdiction compared to the population of Carrboro. And to be efficient, the state already regulates the farms. Please let them regulate them. Please do not recreate the wheel. I keep on hearing the terms of pro-farm, encouraging community gardens, teaching kids about growing vegetables. Personally, I think that's a great idea. I think that is important to educate and to encourage our community. But gardening is not farming. State regulations for farms, you have to have 10 acres of plowable land, plus one for the house. If you want to be a tree farm, you've got to have 20 acres. And horticultural, you need 5. If a garden doesn't grow, you're going to get frustrated because you spent all that time, all that effort with nothing. Maybe an appreciation for the farmers who have to grow it, but you're not dependent upon that if the garden doesn't make it. Whereas if a farm doesn't grow, there's failure. And it's more than just reworking a business plan. It's called closing up the shop. And I cannot stress enough that farming is more, much more than a livelihood. It is a lifestyle choice. There are very few small or medium farms that go from generation to generation in today's world. Kids grow up and they leave the farm. And the likelihood of the existing farms in Carrboro won't be sold to other farmers. We can't afford it. But it'll probably go to developers. And with that being said, it is so important to preserve the remaining farms that want to exist. In the future, the Carrboro can tout this amazing farmers market, but have no farms. And I don't think this is what Carrboro wants. Myself and my neighbors, we primarily do hay and beef cows. And not too long ago, there was a meeting about fertilizer. Restrictions that could destroy Carrboro's farms. No fertilizer, no hay. No hay, no animals. No animals, no farm. Good intentions can leave disastrous effects. There is already an existing infrastructure. Don't recreate the wheel. If the state recognizes us as farms, they already have regulations. What the farmers need is your continued support for us to exist.
Okay, Wayne Lecoq.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the board. I am Wayne Lecoq. I live on Taylor Bell Farm, which is located west of Old Federal Road from the University of Lake, as you well see there. We've been there 100 years, and probably until tonight, 90% of the people in this room didn't even know we existed. But we have been there for a long time, and not meaning to give you a history lesson. 65 years ago, I was in the first grade right here in this room, and I sit just about where the mayor is. And believe it or not, I wasn't in here but 3 years. So I served the Carrboro Fire Department for 33 years and retired in 2001. We have lived there for 100 years this year. The University of Lake Watershed, when it was built, it took part of the farm to build it. We probably make the least environmental impact on the Universal Lake watershed we've ever made. We do no-till farming. We have a few cows. We raise hay and we raise grass to feed them on. I would invite any of you to come out and see where we live, what we look like, how we work, and what we do. You'd be welcome to see that. My granddaddy lived and raised his family and died on the farm. My daddy raised his family and died on the farm. I've raised my family there, and I'm still living. And I spent every day of my 70 years there. I was born in a house on the farm and lived there my whole 70 years. The chief executive officer of Taterberg Farm now is a seven-year-old girl, and she loves animals. She has animals of her own she cares for and takes care of. And my plea to you tonight would be to help us make it possible for her to survive and build her a house on that farm at some point and be as productive as my ancestors have been. Thank you very much.
Karen McAdams.
Thank you very much, Alderman. My name is Karen McAdams, and I'm one of the agricultural agents here in Orange County with the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service. I've worked here in Orange County with farmers, been lucky enough to work with the farmers here in the county for over 26 years. First, I wanted to thank you for your past support of farmers, and including the great farmers market that we have here. There is a great deal of potential for small farms to continue close to towns and even in areas that are developing if care is taken to guard farmers and their right to farm. Recent events over the last several months in this community have unfolded and caused farmers a great deal of distress and worry about whether they're going to be able to keep farming or not. I do have a couple of ideas to share, and I have thought about this quite a bit over the last several months. First off, I would like to consider, for y'all to consider, resolving the current farm housing issue by making an exception or grandfathering in the existing farm housing where there's problems and questions, and then moving forward. And then second, I would like for you to please consider some type of farmland protection plans, farm code, or something to try to help preserve farms in the town and in the ETJ. Farmers work hard, they fight drought, excessive rains like we're having now, you can't get up the hay, low prices, high fuel prices, traffic, development pressure. All of these items hurt farmers, but what could help? My understanding that tonight up at the Orange County Commissioners meeting, the Orange County Ag Preservation Board and the Environmental Resource Conservation Department are presenting an initial draft to the Orange County farmers of a farmland protection plan. This plan had they been working on for the past year to try to help get state funds to help protect farmland, but also to help protect farmland, not just get the funds, but actually help protect farmland. This has had input from a lot of farmers in Orange County, from ag agencies, soil and water, cooperative extension, farm service agency. One of the recommendations included in this farmland protection plan is to pursue a dialogue between Orange County and the municipalities and farmers and ag agencies to try to study issues of zoning, farmland protection, possible farm codes, etc. There are many good ideas in this farmland protection plan draft to help address some of the concerns that have been brought up here. Certainly a dialogue such as this could help prevent regulations that have unexpected results that hurt farmers. I don't think that we need to recreate the wheel. There are a lot of agencies in the county who have been working on farm issues for many years, and I do thank you for your consideration of farmers, I would be happy to try to help get a copy of this farmland protection draft to you and any other assistance that the Cooperative Extension Service could help. Thank you.
Just to clarify your first point, when you talked about housing,
right?
Did you mean housing just like for rental for income purposes?
No, for farm worker housing.
So would there be a way of verifying if the rental was for farm worker housing or just for profit?
Presumably, correct me if I'm wrong, if it's farm worker housing, there wouldn't be rent.
Right.
So, I mean, so if there's rental income coming from it, whether it's in a barn or in a basement, then that really isn't considered farm working housing. Is that correct?
As a general rule, most of the farm worker housing situations that I'm aware of is that the housing is provided as part of their compensation for working on the farm.
Okay. So it would be part of
that. That clarification is important to the issues at hand, so thank you.
My question, to piggyback on what Jackie said, so then that would be part of farm housing for labor would be part of a work contract. It would be part of an agreement.
That is generally the way that most farmers we have in this county, most of the farm housing is involved with either small vegetable farms, where they have interns or help for the summer. Many of our farmers market vendors here have interns that work during the crop season or farm workers. And then we also have stables that have to have on-farm help. So those are the two that I see most often. And we do have a few in the county. We do have some dairy farmers and some crop farmers that do have housing for their workers.
But as part of that compensation,
yes.
that would be
right. There's no
that's part of the contract.
Part of their compensation is yes.
Right. That's a real important point. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Now y'all can clap for me.
All right. Ann Leonard.
Hello, I'm Ann Leonard. My husband, Rob Hogan, and I farm on Hogan's Magnolia Boo Farm, although, in case you can't guess, he's the farming half of our couple. And Rob is a professional farmer. He's educated in farming. His family's been farming on that land since 1757, and he earns 100% of his income from the farm. And I think that there have been a number of really valuable comments tonight. And I think it's important for the board to think, to start with, what are you looking for? What is it that you're trying to do? Are you trying to, in fact, support the farms that exist, to try to make sure that those farms continue to exist over time? Because Kelly's right, there aren't any new farms coming. Mm-hmm. If you have an interest in, you know, local foods, food security issues, all of the sorts of issues that come into local agriculture, and there's a tremendous amount of interest here in local agriculture, and the farming community is really blessed to benefit from that interest. But if you have those interests, then you have to look at this issue from how do we support farming? What is it that we can do to help farmers be farmers in an urban community? Because believe me, I watch Rob every day, and it is an act of love and devotion. He gets up every day and waits 10 minutes at our driveway to cross that road. Now, he is working against the tide to be a farmer in this community. And if you want farms to continue, you have to go into this process thinking about what are we doing to support them. I don't think you need to be thinking about what do we need to do to control them. How are they misbehaving in a way that we need to make sure they don't do that anymore? That's not what's going to get you to what your interests are. So as you look at I think you need to keep your interests, your endpoints in mind as you go into this discussion. I have a couple small points. I would say, please remember that farms are businesses. And if they're not financially viable, they don't stay as farms. And the land is a very serious resource to farmers. And if a farm is not viable, that land has to be traded
and is often sold for development, and as Kelly says, it's not coming back. So I think that Carrboro ought to be looking for ways to make farms financially viable in this community. I would say that rules governing agriculture are complex, and they have to change with science. And that takes technical expertise. It takes ongoing scientific understanding, and that's not something that is widely available. That body of technical understanding exists at the state level and at the federal level, and I think that Carrboro should recognize where the expertise lies and try to take advantage of it. And I would also recognize Karen, because she's been a tremendous resource. And so there are lots of resources about thinking about how to regulate farms, and I think it would be a terrible mistake for Carrboro to try to recreate that in an urban staff. You're an urban municipality, your staff is geared to urban development, and there's no reason that you should have a deep expertise in farming regulation. So I don't think it's a good investment to try to create that for yourself. I would say that it's a mistake to start from the perspective of an urban land use plan and try to adapt it to farming. You're going to make mistakes in that way, and you will impose regulations that will have the kind of unintended consequences that Karen mentioned. I think you have to start from the perspective of the support and the encouragement and the trying to find ways to help farmers maintain. This issue of subdivision, for example, there's a million reasons about you that what you have subdivision rules. But from a farming perspective, can you have subsequent generations live on the farm? That's part of what makes a farm viable over time. So if you look at it from the urban perspective of how many times and the zoning and stuff, you come to the wrong answer. The answer is a farm needs to be able to have its family members live there. And many of the farms in this area are big enough to accommodate that. So I just think thinking about your endpoint and starting from that perspective is going to be very important. And I would like to understand at some point on a slightly different issue why when the municipality was granted the ETJ control, as I understand it, in 1988, and the farm and the voting rights were not given at that same time. That's been a subject of quite a bit of discussion. I don't think I know I don't understand why the voting rights weren't granted at that time. So I'd like to know why that wasn't done then, and I'd like to know why hasn't it been done subsequently. Thank you. We do appreciate your consideration of this.
I'm going to address that last question, but I'll do it after, this last person who signed up. I'm sorry, I can't make out the last name, but Stephanie.
My name is Stephanie Zekel. It's a hard word to pronounce. I am a resident of the Carrboro extraterritorial jurisdiction, and I just wanted, I appreciate very much the challenge you have trying to balance development, watershed protection, farming, and all of those things. I don't envy trying to work that all out and get all the details right. I did not grow up here. I'm not a farmer, but I just came back from a trip to where I grew up, what was once rural Pennsylvania, about 40 miles out of Philadelphia, and saw all of the farms that I grew up with and loved, mostly dairy farms, all gone. Saw the place where I went and went swimming all my childhood years, now shut down because the watershed has been contaminated. You know, an incredible, beautiful park with a beach, gone. Fishermen now, and boats, but no more swimming. So I really, really appreciate the challenges that you face. At the same time, I've also been a resident of Washington, D.C., and any of you who know, I've lived with taxation without representation before. So I feel a little underprivileged here as I come back into another community where I also realize that being in the extraterritorial jurisdiction, I really have no say. And I'm listening to a whole lot of folks who are also basically at your mercy, not able to vote. And since 1988, when that option was offered, Carrboro has chosen not to allow those folks like me who live out in those areas and like many of the farmers here, not have deprived folks of that opportunity. So I would like to make a plea for that. I also have to present some petitions that have been signed, Mrs. Kelly, collected petitions at the farmers market in Carrboro. Over 600 people signed these, and they did sign knowing, I believe, what they were asking for. Let me just read what they signed, what they requested. That they wanted to save the remaining farms within Carrboro's jurisdiction, to assist with preserving the remaining Carrboro area farms. We, the undersigned residents of incorporated Carrboro and of its extraterritorial jurisdiction, ETJ, herewith ask the Carrboro Board of Aldermen to amend the Carrboro Land Use Ordinance so as to allow property owners having at least 10 acres of land within Carrboro's planning jurisdiction to have a separate accessory caretaker residence similar to those allowed for farms within Orange County and other municipalities throughout North Carolina, regardless of the zoning district in which the property lies, and without requiring the further subdivision of farm properties, either as a separate farm code or as an exemption to the existing residential code. They were collected in April and May. So I submit those, and thank you very much.
Just a point of clarity on your petition. Were the units being talked about, they were specifically for farm workers, so they would be rent, they would not be rental properties either in a barn or in a basement that people were making income from. Is that correct? They would be for people who were working on the farm, and that was part of the contract. Is that correct?
That was not discussed necessarily in every case in detail, but it was understood that it's required to have farm assistance on farms to have people living there who could be of assistance.
Okay, so it could be a rental property for somebody who's not working on the farm. Is that correct?
I think the way the petition's worded, it says for so that people could be working
on
the farm.
Accessory. Good. Yes. Just needed that clarification. Yes. Thank you. Thank
okay.
You. And Randy and I were admiring your jacket when you walked up. It's lovely.
All right. Is anybody, we have some last minute additions to the schedule. Come on up. All right. This gentleman first, and then y'all two back there.
Y'all watch out. Walk one side. That's a 5-gallon bucket of water.
You got to do them two at a time to stay balanced.
Yeah. I'm going to start off by saying that us farmers is kind of like the little boy was. He's about 5 years old. He didn't never say a word. Well, one day he started just talking this raising cane. They asked him, said, son, all the time we thought you was handicapped and couldn't talk. He said, well, up to now, everything's been all right. That's where our farmers are. Because y'all know very little about us. We've been out in the country scuffing all these years. My name is Yuma Womble. I live on Smith Level Road and at Womble Farm. And what I got to say, I had to write down because I can't remember all these things. I have stage fright. Y'all never have that problem?
I'm doing great.
Can y'all hear me all right back there?
Yes, sir.
Hello, I'm Yuma Womble, Womble Farmers Smith Level Road. I appreciate the opportunity y'all give us farmers to speak. The farm that I live on has been in Womble hands since the early 1900s or longer. I am proud of my heritage and ancestors. All of the larger farms are still productive. I raise hay crops and sell hay and feed my small herd of anglers with some hay. In the 40s and 50s, when Carrboro was a small mill town, the farmers and townspeople knew each other. The farmers went to town on Saturdays with eggs and butter to use as, let's see what I've got wrote in here. I can't read my own writing. they swapped it for things that they couldn't grow themselves. Hogan Lake Farm and Sparrow's Pool was the true, was the two attractions for entertainment. And that was a great asset to Carver at that time. Also, the university, college students and all would go out to Hogan Lake. They'd be carried out there by local farmers, two in particular, in a two-horse wagon. And I've seen them come through town at night with just a lantern hung up on the standard post, hauling college students. Mr. Cheek's daddy was one that hauled them. And Mr. Cheek was on the board of planning board for years, 30-some mm-hmm. years, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, his daddy was a character, I'll tell you that now. He'd haul those students out there, and they thought so much of them and liked them so good, they'd say, Mr. Cheek, what do you need? He says, get me another sandwich and a glass of beer, please. Everybody said, no, him, he's a wonderful person. He'd go down Greensboro Street with a sack on his back barefoot and going into town to get groceries for the big family he had. And my wife would be sitting on the rock wall down here at the grandmother's house on that street. And he'd say, I'm going to put you young'uns in this sack. They would get up and run in the house. Oh, to grandma. Let's see here. Our farmers, y'all talk about open space. Our farmers offer you open space on every entrance into Carver. We all try to keep our farms looking nice and respectable, and we'll be proud of that. And when people stop by to tell us how good things look, and they do stop to see our cows and they stop to see sunsets, they stop and take pictures, and it makes us feel good when people do that. Now the farm code, that's something that I really hadn't heard much about recently, until recently. We do want y'all to word that thing so that if we do want to give our grandchildren or somebody a piece of land, that we don't have to go through all these restrictions to do that. We don't want to plot off our farms. We want y'all to understand that, and if you do right, be in our favor. So far as the fertilizer, farmers are not responsible for the fertilizer problem. Going into the lake, it's as much as townspeople that's got property right down to the water. My closest land to the watershed is about 600 feet. And from that 600 feet to the water, to the lake water, is pines, honeysuckles, and briars, and all that stuff. So, and us farmers at this day and time can't fertilize like we really want to, and it costs to fertilize. About 150 pounds per acre is all we can afford to put. And that's 150 pounds on 43,000 square feet, which ain't much. Well, somebody living close to the water in a private residence, he may want to put 50 pounds on his backyard just to make it look pretty and green. Well, you're going to have a whole lot more runoff than that is from us farmers. And have you all had any complaints from a washer about the water quality? That ain't no big issue, I don't think, at this time.
You're good, Lee.
And another thing I'd like to emphasize along with Ms. Hogan is the voting rights. I don't understand we don't have voting rights on governed by somebody that we don't even know or even down have a voting privilege. You know, we vote on our president, we vote on our governors. We vote on our county commissioners, but yet we're denied that privilege, and I don't understand that. as Jerry Cloud would say, it's above my intelligence. I'd like to ask one other question. How many was raised on the farm? Raise your hand. Two. Okay, well, that's good to know. So y'all know something about farm life. It is something that's invaluable, I'll tell you that. Every child should be raised on a farm, but that's impossible, of course. So all he can do is let granddaddy and his daddy tell him about it. And what his granddaddy can do is tell him about things that happened way back on him that didn't even happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Who can follow that? Let's see.
Yeah, you sure you still want to speak? Come on up. And if you would state your name.
I couldn't get
your
third because
you
was in it.
I got to say, that didn't sound like stage fright to me, but...
Well, English is not my first language, so I'm just going to read. My name is Sridhar Rajappan. I'm a naturalized citizen from India. I came here to do my master's in health informatics, and I'm an adjunct faculty member for two universities. Today I'm here to support Carbro's ETJ farmers, especially those on the watershed who are seeking the right to vote for those who govern their land, an amendment to the land use ordinance that would allow these farms to operate according to the state law without the intervention from the town's urban residential code. The creation of the town's first ever farm code should also include allowing accessory dwellings not to exceed 750 square feet as currently allowed elsewhere on other ETJ land. For the past nearly 5 years, my family has lived in the Atom Woods apartment in the old Fayetteville Road opposite to Peppermint Spring Farm. And Peppermint Spring Farm is one of the seven farms located in the watershed residential zone. It's owned by Marlene Kelly. For several years, 2.5 years, my daughter has been going to the farm, and she is involved in a lot of this husbandry classes in which area children learn about all the animal care, rehabilitating ill and injured animals, and about how animals can enhance our lives and all those things. My family and our neighbors at Adamwood Apartments are frequent visitors to the farm. In fact, we chose to live in Adamwoods because of all those, you know, ponies and stuff we see every day in the morning when we get up, you know. When I was going through all this information, it reminded me of something like, you know, I'm from India, and recently you would have watched this movie, Slumdog Millionaire, and that you may recall the depiction of unwarranted abuse by the legal authorities who unfairly charged the leading characters with crimes about the society, crimes against the society. In thinking about this movie, I'm reminded of what I've learned over the past 2 years about the town's effort against Mrs. Kelly. I don't mean to claim that Mrs. Kelly has confided details to me. She has not, until I began reading about her farm's plight in the local newspaper. And insisted that she'd clarify the vital points with me. Other than seemingly irresponsible ordinance, there appears no reason why Carbro is insisting that PSF, Peppermint Spring Farm, and the seven watershed farms cannot have a caretaker dwelling. We are not talking about McMansions here. The town defines caretaker dwellings as not exceeding 750 square feet. In the worst case, this amounts to no more than the equivalent of two new residences, where an estimated 126 family homes are otherwise permitted under current law. Surely allowing one to two new residences on an estimated 525 watershed farm acres instead of 126 will not pose a significant threat to the watershed. So why force Ms. Kelly to become a major subdivision, which would allow building schools, daycare centers, parking lots? It doesn't make sense. And there appears no reasonable explanation for why, for 21 years or so, Carborough has denied area farm owners the right to vote, the right to elect those who govern their land, the right to serve on the elected body. I find this appalling, un-American, and democratic. This is not what I imagined when I came here. Please reconsider your position and withdraw your legal action against Ms. Kelly immediately. You are causing irreparable harm to one of our community's most notable and exceptional citizens. Thank you.
We have one more person back here.
Okay, good evening. I'm Miss Missin, and I'm a resident of Carborough. And I'm not a farm owner, but I do appreciate going to farms and visiting them and walking along. And as people are not farmer and living in Carborough, with the petition that has been presented tonight, you can see that people, even if they are not farmer, they are concerned about the farmer. And most of the people in Carborough want to show support for the farmers, and I think it's important to take that into consideration. And today what I want to do is just to give you an example in why some farms can be important for the community. This is only one example, and I know that there is other farms than the one I'm going to talk about, and they all contribute in some way, and sometimes unique way, to the Carborough community. Okay. And the farm I would like to talk about is Raj talked about, Peppermint Spring Farm. I don't know if you are aware about the tremendous charitable effort and commitment, but also the educational work that this farm is involved in. So firstly, this farm rehabilitates rescued horses. Most of the time, those horses have been referred by the North Carolina Equine Rescue League. And those horses and ponies, when they arrive at the farm, in general, they are injured, they are sick, and they have been starving. And if they are there, it's to get better. That's the main goal of Miss Kelly. Those horses, if it wasn't for Peppermint Spring Farm, would have been slaughtered. And today, she has rescued more than 50 horses. Those horses would have died if it wasn't for this farm. The farm of Miss Kelly, Peppermint Spring Farm, is not only involved in rescuing horses, it's also rescuing dogs. About something 30 dogs have been rescued through her. They have most of the time arrived at the farm being sheltered until a family is found for them. It's a lot of work. And if you think that she's been doing all this charity for only animals, horses and dogs, no, it doesn't stop there. She also helped a lot of kids. She has worked, let me get that right, she has worked in affiliation with North Carolina Court System Juvenile Offender Program, and she has provided for a lot of kids the opportunity to work and live on the farm. And they have learned how to respect and also learned to take responsibility by caring by those animals. So it's a lot of work, and it's just the example of one farm. And if I go along telling you what is happening in this farm, it doesn't stop there. I mean, Miss Kelly has also worked with school. She also she does conduct weekly as boundary session for kids, Carborough kids. She teaches them about animals and care and responsibility. That's important things to learn for the children of Carborough. What seems to be important to me, at least. And also, she has been working with other charities. She has been helping with a pony that she rescued. She's helped She's helped raise money during charity events for, like, school churches and things like that. It's important. She has been helping people. And as a resident of Carborough, for me, it's just one example of a great farm that is doing a lot. And I know that there is other farm, and I cannot wait to discover them. And I think that every single farm should be helped. That in the ETG of Carborough, that's your responsibility. They're under your jurisdiction, but they are your responsibility, and you should take care of them. We have learned today how difficult it is to run a farm, financially and even physically. And I hope, and like I'm sure other citizens, that you really do something about that and help the farmer of Carborough. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. If the Board of Aldermen,
good evening, Mayor Chilton, board members. Thank you for listening to all of us tonight. I'm not a farmer. My mother was a farmer. She grew up on a farm during the Great Depression. She's 90 years old, and I just remember one of the wonderful things was listening to her stories about, especially about her blind horse and all the great things that happened living on a farm. One of the main things that we can really think about today is that during the Depression, her family was able to grow vegetables, they had animals, and so they were able to provide food for a family of eight, whereas my father, growing up in the city, had a much more difficult time. And so I want to do everything we can to support our farmers. We've heard a lot from them today. We know a lot of the needs. As the speakers have emphasized, we need to protect our farms and do what we can to support them, not to put unrealistic controls on them. I recognize the need to protect our watershed, our farmers with properties within their jurisdiction, and I'm just as concerned as any Sierra Club member about preserving and protecting the University Lake water quality, perhaps even more so than some. Mainly, not only because it's the water source for our community, but it's also the water source for my family. In October of 2008, the Town Planning Board was asked to review a conditional use permit which required a farm property in the watershed to be subdivided under the rules for a major subdivision to allow a small, in this case about 540 square foot, barn apartment. Just for perspective, that's about half the size of this room that we're in tonight. For me and several other members of the Planning Board, the process required by our current land use ordinance seemed excessive. Recognizing the unique needs of our owners of farm properties within the Carborough planning jurisdiction and addressing those needs appropriately became a matter of concern. As stated by the earlier speakers, there are a limited number of these properties in Carborough's watershed residential zoning district. Requiring a CUP in major subdivision seemed more like using a sledgehammer to tap a picture hanger into a wall. Instead, I proposed a text amendment with a more appropriate process for approving a small accessory dwelling for a caretaker on watershed residential properties. It's modeled after the land use ordinance requirements for accessory apartments throughout Carborough. It does not increase the amount of allowable impervious surface in the watershed. That's 4% per property. There is no attempt whatsoever to try to increase that 4%. On the contrary, when an accessory dwelling would be located above a garage or in the loft area of a barn, it would add no additional impervious surface to the watershed. Most importantly, it is a tool which the farm property owners have acknowledged would make it easier for them to continue farming their property. It would eliminate the risk of prematurely imposing greater impervious surface square footage on watershed farm properties, which under a CUP are allowed buildings much larger than a 750 square foot accessory dwelling proposed by this text amendment. While this text amendment does not address all the issues that the farmers in Carborough's planning jurisdiction have presented in this meeting and in their meetings with the Planning Board, it's a start. With no right to representation over decisions with the town of which the town of Carborough can make on their land, this text amendment is a critical component of a farm code to cover these unique properties in our town planning jurisdiction. I respectfully ask that you carefully consider the merits of this text amendment and use it as a starting point to address unique needs of our farmers. As so many tonight have stated, our farmers need our support, not unreasonable controls. Thank you, and I'll leave it.
Sharon, I have a question for you. Do you concur with Ms. McAdams that the caretaker apartments would not be rental apartments?
Well, the purpose of a caretaker apartment, of course, is to care for the farm. I have a dog and two cats.
I was asking about your pets. I was asking about your
text
amendment.
No, no, there's a point I'm trying to make.
Right. Your text, it's a very specific question.
It's very specific.
Your text amendment
that
you proposed that was rejected by the planning board, did that, was your definition of caretaker apartments in line with what we've heard this evening, that it would not include rental apartments?
You know, Dan, I think that was an assumption. So I don't think that it's specifically spelled out in there, but that's certainly something that I hope the board would consider and discuss and make it real clear.
And what, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
I don't think it's specifically spelled out, no.
In your
text
amendment.
That was certainly not intentional that it wasn't. It was just...
Well, what's your view on that?
I think the obviously what we said is that in order to maintain a farm in this day and age, the expenses and everything, we need a caretaker on board.
So it should not be a rental apartment?
Pardon?
It should not be a rental apartment.
I'm not recommending rental apartments. Okay. I'm recommending caretaker apartments.
If someone built an apartment and it was a rental apartment, would there then be a penalty involved in your
Well, that's something that certainly the board would have to discuss.
But you don't have a point of view on that as the person who's proposing this.
That it should have a penalty on it? No,
if
but
it's
actually...
It's not actually a caretaker apartment, but a rental apartment.
I didn't think about that. I guess I was going from a point of honesty, integrity, and not looking at,
the
negatives.
It is a little pertinent, particularly coming from that point of view.
And if a person claimed to be building a caretaker apartment and it was a rental apartment, and in fact, they already had a rental apartment, so this was the second one, would that be allowable under your text amendment?
No, this allows for one caretaker apartment.
Okay, thank you.
And as we know, you can't leave animals for more than a short, even a whole day alone.
Let me just clarify one thing. I want to be real clear that when Sharon, when you say caretaker apartment, you mean somebody who is in the employ of the farmer.
Right, somebody who helps take care of the farm.
So that
whether they help with security, whether they help take care of the animals when the farmer has to be absent. Like I mentioned, when you have animals, you can't just leave. You can't even leave for probably half a day. I don't know about farm animals.
So that the part of the work contract, part of the compensation is the residence.
You know, I didn't get into those details.
So you certainly wouldn't support building income property out on a farm that had nothing to do with the work of the farm. You wouldn't, in honesty and integrity, support that, would you?
No, my purpose of this text amendment is to support caretaker apartments for farms, which, as we heard tonight, the farmers have said they need in order to help.
Oh, we hear that, and we've heard that for years, and we certainly understand that.
Sharon, I have one other question for you. Is your view sort of philosophically on this, that caring relationships would go both ways, both that the caretaker would be providing care on the farm, but the farmer would care for the caretaker? You know, that it would
in
be,
what sense would
that
the
would be
care
that it would be, you know, a respectful relationship,
mutually beneficial relationship.
Yeah.
So for example, if the person living in that apartment had to call town hall because the apartment was not being properly maintained, that would kind of be a violation of your expectation of what that relationship would be about.
The text amendment which I'm proposing does not seek to circumvent any kind of safety
or
kind of regulations that are necessary. We don't want to set up a situation where we're creating fire hazards or any other kind of safety hazards for whoever would live there or for the farm itself. So it's not intended to circumvent anything. It's certainly not in any way, shape, or form. It's intended fully and completely to support the work of our farmers to make it possible for us to maybe stave off a little longer losing these farms to development.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Thank you, Karen.
All right, thanks very much.
Thank you.
May I speak? I hadn't planned to, but I hear my name a lot. I would like to address
the
question.
Hold on just a moment. We'll recognize folks in order. Ms. Killey, if you would come up to the podium.
I'm sorry?
If you would come up to the podium.
Yes, thank you. I would like an opportunity to answer your question.
I didn't ask you a question.
The question of the purpose of this apartment.
No, I was talking about Ms. Cook's text amendment.
Well, I'd like the opportunity, if you don't mind,
to address about the apartment, why this apartment came into existence, without going into a lot of the detailed history. The primary purpose of this apartment, from inception, from before I even bought this property, my husband and I looked for a property like this as residents of Chapel Hill for almost 7 years, and then he died, and this property came on the market. So the plans for this barn were designed by my husband beginning in about 1988. Jumping forward to 1997 when the apartment was built, without going into the documents that may or may not any longer exist, the purpose and the primary purpose of this apartment has always been security. Always been. Now, I do charge rent, but I have never even entertained meeting with a prospective tenant without first making it clear to them on the phone that we are a legal, viable, working farm, that anybody who comes to be considered to live in this apartment must demonstrate a history of having lived on a farm, have managed livestock, to have knowledge of emergency procedures, and a commitment to helping from time to time. My farm otherwise uses as labor primarily UNC students, and they're thrilled to have a job doing something that they've done for many, many years and had to stop because they gave their horses up to go to the university. But this apartment charges rent. It charges $650 a month, and I can tell you, our tenants think it's a bargain. Now, I teach them to drive our Ford 3000 tractor. I teach them how to deliver babies. I teach them about food and why we have four different kinds of grains, depending on their ages, on their physical conditions, on their weights, on their uses. And then I say to them, your job is to back me up on an emergency basis so that when I do travel, their rent gets discounted at a rate of $20 an hour. I'm trying to say to you, they're not full-time employees, but they are critical to the security. And I will tell you that in 2007, after Linda Nathanson fabricated a totally falsified claim that there were plumbing problems in this apartment, I ceased to lease that apartment for 2 years, over 2 years. During that time, if you check with the Carborough Police Department and you check with Orange County, all of a sudden, for the first time ever, we have had unceasing vandalism. We have had our animals routinely turned out into the highways in the middle of the night. We have had them poisoned. We have had fires. We have had thefts. Because that apartment no longer has a vehicle parked in front of it. It no longer has a security gate that's impregnable. We had an alarm system running under that driveway through our internet service that we no longer can have because the power is disconnected for the apartment. There is no power in that apartment, even though you've been told there's electric power. There was in the wintertime to prevent the pipes from freezing. What I'm trying to say to you is this was conceived to be a very viable farm use because of its proximity to the town of Carborough. In 1997, there were so many farms burglarized in Orange County, according to Major Truelove in the Orange County Sheriff's Department, that he specifically said to me, you had better do everything in your power to protect your farm and your animals. We shifted from finishing the exterior face of this barn from treated oak to plywood. And the reason we did it is because when I first spoke with your head inspector, Mike Canova, I told him I did not have the $35,000 to finish this apartment, but it was in the future plan. It was intended. which is why all the plumbing and bathroom apartment, all that is under poured concrete, which was completed in October of 1997. Nothing was completed after that. Nothing. Final trim pieces, that was it. But the purpose of this, we shifted to finishing the exterior face of that barn with plywood in an effort to save money because of security problems that were arising, not because of Autumn's Wood, but because of the expansion of Carborough that put the town on our doorstep. We have had never, ever, in 10 years at that point, we had never had any kind of safety security problems. None, ever. And now we have them all the time. You can check your own police chief's records to see that. The reason for that is we no longer have security. Just this morning, I found two of our ponies on Old Fayetteville Road, and I want to know, who the hell let them out in the middle of the night? And I would know that answer if we had someone living in that apartment right now as a deterrent to the encroachment of the town.
Does anybody in the people who live in the basement apartment at your house help out with that at all? They can't help? Do you not have a basement apartment at your house?
I don't have a basement apartment. We have a two-level house.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Laycock can tell you this. It was his uncle's house, and Mr. Laycock helped build this house in 1954. It's a family room on the ground level of the house. It's been there from the very beginning. And it's got a storage room. I don't use it as a garage.
A tenant who lives in there?
I don't. At this time, we have had a number of people living with us over time. Visitors to the university. We have had at-risk children that have come through us through social services and through the Youth Offenders Program. We have housed them down there over the years. We've had children that were kicked out of their homes from the McDougal Middle School and from Chapel Hill High School living there.
Okay.
I think I heard somebody talk about these services that we do, but this is what our farm is committed
to doing. That's very nice.
I
appreciate you're doing that for the community. That's very nice.
I don't do it for the community. I do it because there's a need. Because my family, a family of teachers and social workers, raised my brothers and myself to give back, and we believe very firmly that it's the only way society can be better. That is why I do it. I don't want to stand here. I'm embarrassed to stand here and talk about what I do. I don't look for other people's money. I don't broadcast it. I feel that I've been forced to do that because of the town's efforts against our farm. We keep a very low profile. We're known to those who appreciate and need the farm services. I don't want to go into newspapers. I don't want to be on television. I don't want to broadcast this to the Sierra Club or any of that stuff. I want to simply help our kids, help our horses, help our dogs, help the people that love our farm. That's all I've ever asked for from this community. That's all I'm asking for tonight. To please leave us alone to thrive, to be a viable community member, and okay, not to drive us out.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Hogan, you want to get the last word in?
Just one question.
Yes, sir.
I actually have been enjoying this meeting. It's been very constructive.
I think so.
But I will have to ask Jacqueline and Dan, what is wrong with rent? I can't understand. I mean, either it's anti-business, it's anti-farm.
No, let me answer your question.
Yeah,
Look, my question was that we're being told that farmers need a caretaker apartment. And we were told by Ms. McAdams that typically those are not rental apartments, those are provided as a condition of service. So I don't have anything against rent. I own property that I rent. But
well, you question it, though.
No, I don't question rent.
Oh, I heard you question
I didn't question rent. I questioned what the definition of a caretaker apartment is, because I want to be very clear what Ms. Cook is talking about.
We've seen a clear definition tonight. government, as I understand it, of what, and I'm going to use Maryland's property as an example, but it's just an example, because that's, I'm not in that fight. But if you choose 126 houses over 520 square feet, what's wrong with renting it or not? There are rental properties all over, Jackie, there are rental properties all over this town.
Rob, I know that, and...
So what, why, if I wanted to put one rental property out there to give me a tiny bit of income and maybe an internship or something, what is wrong with that?
Right, but that's, my point is, that's not the question.
Explain that to me. Before I leave the podium, I want you to explain it.
That's a different question.
Can I try to address it?
All right. Well, everybody's left without an explanation. Tell me.
Rob, I'll tell you, and I can't go into a lot of detail, but it has to do with being told one thing and knowing that another thing is what's going on.
For an example, if I came and wanted to put in an apartment over at the airport across the road and built an apartment.
Yeah.
And said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to charge $800 worth of rent. I'm going to deduct the amount of work that they do, but I need to take the rent. And I present that to you. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with that.
But the only few comments your board has made tonight, the whole evening, has been about rent.
Okay,
because we haven't gotten to our discussion yet.
Okay,
hold on, just a minute, if you would. Let me just respond for just a second, then I'll let you talk too. I think the point they were trying to get at is if the request is change the rules in the watershed so that we can do this, so that we can help out farmers with the caretaker housing, whatever. I think the point they were trying to get at is that there be some way to know that it's bona fide, to know that it's genuine. Okay. And I'm not saying whether that has to do with rent or no rent, but I think there has to be, in my mind, there has to be something that demonstrates how that's real. And I think there's a specific reason that we raise that question of whether it's real or not. And it's because there is some doubt about whether what has been claimed to be a caretaker apartment in this one particular case really genuinely is that, whether there's really one apartment there on that property, whether there's really two. I've heard from folks who rented there. I've heard from folks who said, no, I want no caretaker.
Mr. Chilton, I'm not talking about issue. I want to use
and
one
I don't
example.
Want to talk
do,
about
you, do you know there are houses in Carlboro right now that are subleasing down to 5, 6, 8 people per house?
I don't doubt it.
I know. I can take you to them and show them to you. So why are we arguing about a 500 square foot rental property? It's not making any sense to me. What I want to say.
Okay.
But you're not making any sense, Jackie.
Okay. Now let me
Mark, can I say one other thing? And because this is going to come up again, which is that, if we get into talking about matters of code or of the Carlboro Land Use Ordinance, then the words we use have to have meaning. And so here on the board, we're going to discuss what are the definitions of things, and we'll throw out ideas and try to get to a solution that works for everything, for everyone, as best we can. And what's happened here tonight so far is the very, very beginning of that discussion. We've mostly been listening. We've had a few questions for speakers. There's still a whole section where we're going to talk about these items and when we're going to hear from staff.
Okay. Go ahead, Mark. I want to start by, I think, I want to start right after I hear from Mrs. Bockwell.
Well, I'm just like everybody, I just bring up the rear of everything. I just sit back there and try really hard not to have to come up here and say anything. But I didn't make a speech, and I've got a bad prick in my neck, so if y'all think I'm acting weird, I am. you know, First of all, I want to thank everybody that came up here and spoke. I agree with everything all y'all said. To give the ones of you that don't know me a little bit of history, I'm Linda Brockwell Roberts, live at Calvander. My family's been out there since the early 1920s. My granddaddy hauled cows to the livestock in Hillsboro. He was an old-fashioned farmer. My daddy tried to make a living farming. He had a little hard time with it, so he got trucks, and now we sell mulch. And, you know, I think it's sad. I really do. I'm almost 60 years old. Well, I'll be 59 in July. My husband out there, he'll be 60. We've got 3 kids, 5 grandkids. We all live on each one of the little corners out there at Calvander. And I think there's something that you board just miss. You try to tend to everybody's business. And, you know, and yeah, I'm going to take up over 3 minutes, but my husband's sitting out there, so he'll give me his. It just seems this goes way back. There's a lot of bad blood between the farming people and Carver. I'll just be honest about it. It goes way back. In my family, anyway. We didn't ask to be a part of Carver. I fought it tooth and nail. Stayed gone from my family, kids, husband, parents, night after night after night. Fighting being a part of Carrboro. And it's a shame. Carrboro's a nice town. And one thing y'all probably don't know, it was named after my mother's cousin, General Julian S. Carr. But my family's been around here, as well so as all these others, for a long, long, long time. And I don't know, you know, jumping around a little bit more, who do y'all think has looked after this area for y'all to enjoy all these years? And y'all pick on one poor lady, a widow lady. You know, the Bible says, I'm not a preacher. God knows I'm not no preacher. I cuss like a sailor. But the Bible does say that we look after orphans and widows. This lady, I don't know her particular case that much, but I think this town ought to be ashamed. Every one of us. Y'all, not me, of what y'all had put that poor lady through. Well, I had a discussion with you about this, and then that article come out in Carver paper that you wrote. And y'all think I want to be a part of Carver? I'm sorry. If there was any way that I could pull my part out from y'all's control, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'm sorry. Farmers stick together. Country people stick together. We're country folks. Look at them. We're country people. We look after one another. We don't need Jackie to tell us, well, if we build a little apartment on our farm, regardless of whether it was in the right plan or the right this or the right that, whether or not we can charge a few hundred dollars rent, I've traded out labor with our business to Spanish people that didn't have the money to pay rent, so we worked them and gave them a place to live. We look after one another. We do not need a board of people that knows nothing about farming to tell us how to run our business. And I really would love to ask each one of you sitting here, who do you think has looked after this community and this area for y'all to enjoy? Was it you, Dan? Was it you, Lydia? You, John? You, Mark? Jackie? Randy? Was it y'all? No. It was these people. And I think they deserve a round of applause, because everybody here enjoys the fruits of their labor. We enjoy riding down the road, seeing their cows. I enjoy sitting in my backyard looking at our cows. I mean, my daddy was the last man to mow University Lake before they let it fill up. And he was just a boy, little boy. You think I want to see University Lake messed up? I don't want to see it messed up. But do you really think that building one little apartment on how many acres of land, Miss Kelly? 20? Is a big deal. I don't. And we have spent how many hours here fussing about fertilizer? Good God. Do y'all know about fertilizer? These people can tell you anything you want to know about it. They know a lot more about it than I do. I mean, truly, Mayor, don't they? They know more about it than you do, and you was raised on a farm. But I guarantee you, Rob or Mr. Womble, any of them, could tell you a lot more about it than you know.
No doubt.
I don't know what you people want out of all of us. But I do think it's a sad day when these people that has to get up early and work their farms, all the hours that has been spent, we don't need y'all telling us what we can and can't do. We know what to do, and we do it the right way. If we hadn't, I think we'd already been gone. So, you know, I think maybe the farmers ought to just keep on sticking together. Y'all run your town, let us run our farms. And don't worry about it.
All right. let me start by addressing two of the simpler issues that are involved here. And the first one is a couple of people have mentioned this issue about fertilizers. I think that issue is resolved. We've only adopted some fertilizer rules that apply within the town limits of the town of Carrboro. So I think there are a total of four farms that are potentially affected by that. We had discussions with the Agricultural Extension Office and also with at least half, maybe three quarters of the farms that are affected by those rules, and at this point believe that we've got a good compromise that everybody can live with. We're not trying to put any rules out there on the extraterritorial jurisdiction. In fact, I don't believe we would have the authority to put any rules on y'all who are outside of city limits about fertilizers anyway. So, and that brings me to the second issue that I think we can dispose of pretty quickly. You know, I think some of y'all have raised some interesting questions about why is it that folks in the ETJ don't get the right to vote, and somebody went so far as to reference taxation without representation. Well, now, let me point out, here's the key thing, is if you're in the ETJ, you are not taxed by the town of Carrboro. You're not paying Carrboro town taxes. You pay plenty of Orange County taxes, plenty of Chapel Hill School District taxes. I have no doubt about that. I do too, but we don't tax y'all out there. And under the
Mayor, one thing, the Orange County Commissioners don't rule us, y'all do.
Well, I'll come to that in just a second. Now that is an unusual thing. There is and ought to be, and it's a founding principle of the government of the United States, that if you are to be taxed, you ought to be able to vote on who it is that's making the taxing decisions on you. And I'll just point out that's not a principle that North Carolina law violates, as far as I know. I don't believe, Mr. Attorney, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that North Carolina law gives us any choice about whether people in the ETJ are allowed to vote in Board of Aldermen races.
Well, the mayor's right. Whoever there said yes, it does, is incorrect. By statute, you know, unless the legislature changes the statutes, people in ETJ just do not have the right to vote in municipal elections. That's the law.
That's what North Carolina state law says. What's that?
We cannot.
The North Carolina state legislature over in Raleigh could consider changing that, although I think there's also some constitutional questions that would be raised by that. I believe there's parts of the North Carolina state constitution that might present a problem as well. But
Mr. Chilton, I was given an opinion about that by an attorney just on Thursday for maybe the fifth or sixth time. And what I was told was that in 1988, when development jurisdiction would transfer to the municipalities from counties, that the municipalities were given the option of allowing voting rights to the ETJ or not.
Now, I'll ask.
I'm suggesting maybe it's just something we need to clarify.
Okay, I'll ask the town attorney if he would take the time to read up on this matter and report back to us on the actual facts of the matter. That's not how I understand it, but I'm not an expert in that area of law. So we will ask the town attorney to look into that. All right. And then the third issue, which I'm sure the entire board will want to discuss, is about this caretaker apartment business. And before we get too deeply into it, let me say this. I'm open to a compromise personally on this issue. I'm open to a compromise. I actually was persuaded by you, Mrs. Brockwell, when we talked a couple weeks ago in the next room over there about the importance of being open to a compromise, of working out something that is a mutually agreeable solution. But I think it's critical that no matter what happens, that all of us acknowledge that the laws of the state of North Carolina apply to us, and that if we're in Carrboro's jurisdiction, the ordinances of the town of Carrboro apply to us. That is to say, when I got elected as mayor, I stood right up there, and Sarah Williamson administered an oath to me, and that oath was to uphold laws of the state of North Carolina and of the United States of America, and I made a solemn vow to do that. And I expect I don't expect anybody to be perfect. I don't expect anybody to be perfect. But I expect for there to be the acknowledgement that the laws are valid. Maybe certain laws don't make that much sense. And maybe they need to be changed. And that's fine. But until they are changed, they need to be respected. And they need to be upheld.
Ma'am, the public
comment period is over.
I understand. I think this is inappropriate.
Ma'am, that time has passed for public comment in this meeting. I am seeking to uphold laws. If I came and trespassed all over your property, Mrs. Brockwell, and you caught me, I would start by apologizing to you, and then next I would ask for your forgiveness. And usually you're a pretty nice lady, and you probably would forgive me if I acknowledged what I'd done, if I was honest with you, and promised not to do it again.
Yes, I would.
I tell you what, I'll just not do it in the first place. How's that? But but what I'm saying is that there's a connection between forgiveness and acknowledgement of wrongdoing in my mind and to me.
I understand that.
And I think, you know, if we can get to a point where the actual facts of the matter are acknowledged and where the ordinances of the town of Carrboro are being respected, and the Orange County court system is being respected, and the power of our local courts is respected, then that's the point where I can feel like I'm open to some compromise. And I mean that sincerely. And I think the proposal that says, you know, some kind of rule about caretaker apartments And I don't know about whether, you know, this issue about rent or all that business, I'm not into that topic particularly, but I think if somebody wants to have a caretaker apartment in University Lake Watershed, and it's that's bona fide what it is, and it's for a farm, that makes a lot of sense to me. It's it sounds like pretty minimal impact, and I'm open to going there and to doing that. But what I'm not open to is simply changing the rules because one person needs those rules changed in order to justify things that were not done correctly to begin with, especially when there's no acknowledgement. There's no acknowledgement that the proper approach was never brought in the first place. In other words, what I'm trying to say is there's an old saying that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And I don't really believe in that. I believe that you ask permission, you know, and hopefully you get it. I certainly don't believe in the notion of forgiveness without essentially confession. And that's what I got to say about that. I think it would be fine to move forward with considering this caretaker apartment issue. I think it would be appropriate for there to be for that issue to be looked at in the context of there being some honest acknowledgement of what actually happened, and some respect shown for both the authority of the Carborough Board, authority and responsibility of the Carborough Board of Aldermen, and for the authority of the Orange County court system.
May I now speak?
Comment period is over in this meeting. Alderman, if you have comments.
Yeah, I have a comment.
Just give me 30 seconds.
That
part of the meeting is over.
Yeah, I'm glad this map is back up now, because several of the speakers made reference to preserving our remaining farms, which I agree is really important to, you know, to whatever extent we can achieve that. And to whatever extent the town can be supportive of that, I want to do that. In this northern study area, as you may have heard earlier, you know, we're reviewing the plans for that area currently. Planning staff is looking at them, and there's there's discussion about what's going to happen, what kind of development's going to happen in those areas. And there are people in Carborough who think that you're all aware, I'm sure, that we have an urban services boundary around Carborough and Chapel Hill. There are people who think that if it's inside the urban services boundary, which I believe is the orange line, is that right, Roy, that everything ought to be developed to urban form. And in fact, that the way you help the environment is by maximally developing all those areas. Now, I believe that, you know, those areas that are farms, you know, and we've heard a lot about what all the good work farmers do, but I think, you know, we've got 10,000 years of history of farmers taking pretty good care of the environment. So I think the extent those areas remain farms, the better off we are, both environmentally speaking, in terms of food, in terms of quality of life, really. But the reason I'm bringing this up is that those of you who are here tonight to talk about farm issues, that's something to pay attention to, and that hopefully you'll come back when we talk about the update to that plan and give us your ideas on what you think the future of those properties should be. And, like, you know, just to throw out one example without getting into a specific discussion, is, you know, one of the green areas is Mr. Hogan's property. And a lot of people think, well, you know, that's a really key area that should be developed a certain way. And perhaps Mr. Hogan does as well. But it is still in that category of those few remaining farms. So I guess all I'm asking is that, as well as the input we've had tonight, I hope you all will pay attention to this question and let us have your thinking about the future of this northern area of Carborough, that there's a lot of development pressure up there. And, you know, I think your insights would be valuable.
Lydia.
Yeah, I have several comments I want to say about tonight. One is, I really appreciated hearing from everyone here, and especially the farmers with your stories. It reminds me of hearing my dad and my uncles talk about their days on the Lavelle Brothers Dairy up in Athens, Ohio. It's just a wonderful heritage that we have here, and I appreciate hearing it. I have several comments. One is, like the mayor, I'm open to visiting this issue of the accessory apartment. My issue, which I'm certain the board's issue is, we need to balance the issue of the watershed against it. And I'd like to see us look at that and look at some kind of a way that perhaps that can be worked out for those few landowners. Secondly, Ms. McAdams talked about the farmland protection program that's being discussed tonight at the county commissioners meeting. And I think that it would be it'd be good for us to have some dialogue with the county about that, hear a report perhaps on what went on with that or what's going on with that, if it's some kind of a program that is being discussed with regard to counties as well as municipalities, some kind of way we can be a part of that or learn more about that or buy into it. I'd be interested in hearing where that goes. Third, this issue of the farm code, and maybe the attorney can help just a minute with this, but a lot of towns and municipalities simply have their rules set up a different way. And this is kind of the way I look at it. You know, some have a big ordinance that has all the rules in it, and they might be kind of mixed up in a certain way. Some might have a set of rules where you have a housing code and a farm code and a this code and a that code. And I think some of what our farmers think we lack in a farm code is actually somewhere in the land use ordinance. It just may not be immediately accessible or identifiable. And in some ways, I think the word farm code, to some degree, is semantics. And is Mr. Attorney, is can you respond to that?
Well, one of the comments I had to the manager during the discussion was, I'm not really sure exactly what everyone means by farm code. We have all sorts of regulations at various different locations in our town code that may relate to farming activities and what can be done, what can't be done, and just general life activities. Mm-hmm. But it's not all together in one place that we can call a farm code. So one of the things that would be helpful to me and to us as the town attorneys would be getting some kind of understanding of what the various stakeholders mean when they say farm code, and getting an idea of whether we need one document that's called a farm code, or we simply need to identify where in our existing regulations those elements that would be a farm code are located. Right. And then decide whether any tweaking or rewriting needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. The other municipalities you represent, you're not aware of any explicit farm codes.
I'm certain that the other municipalities we represent do not have a farm code.
It's my sense from comments I've heard this evening and on the planning board and emails and so on that it seems what our farmers are looking for is a way to be able to kind of see all the rules that apply to the farms. And if we have those in some kind of a way that we can find them, albeit, you know, kind of painstakingly, it might be a way of somehow cross-referencing or whatever, but that's kind of that's what I'm thinking when I hear this word farm code thrown out. And not to say that there might be something else we need to add to it. And the last question I just have as a general question is I go to the farmers market every weekend, and I'm curious as to how many of the farmers market vendors are from Carbro's ETJ, and I just, at some future point, I'd be interested in knowing that.
I've got so many things going through my mind right now. I want to thank everyone who spoke. This is a really important first step in discussion, broad and open amongst the community and the board. My father was born and raised on a farm, and his family lost their farm in 1928 to a corporation. And some of the folks on this board know, when I go back to New York, I go upstate New York to the area where my father's farm was, which is now a big hotel, carved out of this beautiful mountain. And anyway, so I understand. I really do understand. And I think there are several things that have become entangled in this discussion. I think part of what we're trying to do tonight is disentangle several of the pieces. I really appreciate Karen McAdams and Ag Extension. I've worked for years with Gail Hughes. I know that the, some of the issues that can be disentangled have to do with looking at the relationship between this question of what is farm code, what do we all want out of that, what do we think it is, and our land use ordinance. How is that not meeting the need, or how is it being misinterpreted? So I think that that's something we absolutely need to tease out and be clear about. I think one of the things that really needs to be distinguished, which is not clear, and it came out tonight when Karen was talking about farm housing and the difference between labor being compensated with housing for their services and housing that may be for extended family or for relatives. I think we need to clarify that as well. I happen to know that when you work a farm, very often in your contract, you're given residence. I worked migrant work in Washington and British Columbia for over a year, and so I know that when I contracted to work the orchards, I was given housing, and that was compensatory for working the orchards. That has to be separated from family and extended family being able to build on lands. We need to look at that, because I don't want that to be blurred. That seems like it's blurred. So I think there's several points at which we can explore further, and I think that this is a good time to, look to staff, clarify the questions that we need clarified, and be able to move forward with it, because the questions that came up tonight are important to the farmers, but as I said, there's several pieces of this that become entangled with other issues that I would like to see extracted.
There are a lot of things that I'd like to say, and some of which I won't. Some people who have attacked me here tonight are people who I've defended and done things for. Let me talk, Linda. I think that when you're trying to make policy and you're trying to do what's right for the community, that you've got to start from a basis of truth. And when there are half-truths and innuendos and out-and-out untruths entering into the conversations, it makes it very, very difficult. Now, I understand that when people are elected officials, that it's very hard for anything that I say, you're not going to believe me, because you're going to say, oh, they're an elected official. If I try and counter an untruth with the truth, then it's an odd dynamic. But we've got to do what's right for the community, and that includes the farmers. And the only way to do that is to deal from a basis of truth, and not things that are being put out for political gain or for personal reasons. And so hopefully over the next couple months, we'll get to the basis of truth
and we can move on and do what's right for the community.
I'd like to move the resolution referring the citizen comments and board comments to staff, and that we would receive a follow-up report.
Second.
Okay. Motion has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. Okay. We do have about a half a dozen more things on our agenda tonight, so
let's move.
Mark, I'm wondering if
let's take care of Jack first.
Well, I'm wondering if items 3 and 4 we can just deal with without a presentation. And
okay, well,
I mean, I'm ready to vote for them affirmatively, unless someone.
I think a number of them are non-controversial. Let me ask that those of you who were here for this part of the meeting and who are now leaving, if you would go ahead and make your way out. Fairly quickly so we can move on with the rest of our agenda. Dan, you said you made a suggestion about which items?
Items 3 and 4, I think, are both, to me, non-controversial, but I think we can just vote.
Mr. Attorney, for item 3, do we need to have is this a hearing we're holding?
Well, I think it's a modification.
No hearing.
So there's no hearing required. It's a minor modification.
Okay. All right, I have one person signed up to speak, Jack Haggerty. Brevity is the soul of wit, Jack.
Unless you all have any questions.
Okay.
Pretty straightforward.
Very witty. All right. Is there a motion?
Yes, so moved. We have the resolution
second.
Approving.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Good luck, fellows. We love having Chapel Hill Tire in our community and appreciate your good service.
We earned it. Yeah. Thank you
okay.
for waiting.
Move that we waive the fee for the Crest Street project of OCHLT.
Second that.
It's been moved and seconded for the Crest Street fee waiver. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. A report on a petition regarding amendment to the livestock ordinance. Actually, we're going to take
wait,
a
4 minutes and then take
we're going to take a 4 minute break.
3 minutes.
Yeah, at least 5 minutes.
What?
We can be on a bathroom line.
If we let the hall clear, then
I got
to
run.
I'll go. Okay.
Okay. We are going to take a 4 minute break. There's a. back at it. The next item on our agenda is a report on petition regarding an amendment to livestock ordinance. I think in lieu of the presentation, I would just like to call on, I have one person signed up to speak, Sammy Slade, if you would come up to the podium and make your comments quickly, please.
Hello. I was reading through the memo that the staff provided the Board of Aldermen, and in consideration of having livestock in town, one of the points that stood out to me was when a while ago it was made a town ordinance to restrict livestock in town. It was chosen 40,000 square feet of land in recognition that would preclude livestock in almost every residential subdivision. And so thinking that at that time in Carver's history, the community didn't want livestock. The reason why that number was chosen was because the community didn't want livestock. And I would argue that we currently are living in a time when maybe the community does want livestock, and we may want to reconsider the reason for that number. And then the other point that I wanted to make was also looking through the current town ordinance, not just with livestock, but with vegetable production. There is a banning of selling anything produced within town limits for commercial purposes. So you wouldn't actually be able to sell eggs if you had it in town. So. If you guys decide to go with point two tonight, I would just hope that in the future we'd be able to come back and look at and update some of these current ordinances, taking into account the change in what people want nowadays in Carver. That's pretty much all I wanted to share. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Sammy.
The mayor, if I might, I wanted to, I guess, to make an official announcement, and also want to congratulate Sammy Slate, who announced today he's running for the Board of Aldermen. And I want to let also thank all of you and the town of Carver for giving me the opportunity to serve for the last 6 years. And I will be
that's
officially.
That's 8 years, John.
Eight years now?
Maybe 6 years.
But it only seemed like
ADD is something I'm always struggling with.
You were in a coma. But,
I want to let folks know that I will not be running for re-election. I'll be finishing my term, and I'm delighted and fully behind Sammy Slade, who will continue to provide for many of you. Maybe you don't know, you see this white guy with a beard, but he's half Colombiano, he's a Latino, who will continue bringing a voice to this community, to the diversity of the most valuable thing that Carborough has is its diversity of many things. And I think Sammy brings so many things to this town, has so much to offer, and he already is a leader in our community and a community organizer, and have planted many seeds, and I really look forward to his next step of becoming the second Latino alderman in the town of Carborough. Wish you a lot of luck, and thank you, all of you guys, for giving me this opportunity to serve with you too. But many of you know I had a change of life, and I remarry. Now I went from 3 kids to 6 kids, and I really want to spend more time with my family. So the demand for my time is, I feel I had contributed all I got for the time being, and looking forward to seeing your leadership and the great work that you guys do for this beautiful town.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, John, I'm looking forward in December to having the opportunity to thank you for your service and for what a fine colleague you've been. But right now I'm going to beat a hasty retreat from the political to matters of governance. And I would like to move Resolution A with the direction of staff of item 2 in the report, which is to amend the existing ordinance by making a limited exception for the type of goats requested by Ms. Prince.
Second. I just have a question, and that is on the size and weight. Are we talking 120 to 150 pounds?
We're talking about the kind of goats.
The
fainting goats.
Okay.
So
specific to control, you just go boo, and
I know.
There you go.
I know. I actually know why they faint.
Me too. They're scared.
Low blood pressure?
No, I'm going to tell folks this. Yeah. This is really interesting. Kent Carter, who is the supervisor of the animals at the Durham Life Science Museum, shared this with me when I went to talk to him about this issue. Fainting goats were bred to faint so that when they were on farms and the wolves came around, they were the sacrificial goats. They would faint. They would be an easy target. And the rest of the farm animals would be fine.
I know political groups like that.
Hence fainting goats. So this is specific to the fainting goats.
That's the proposal.
Okay. Very good.
Goat issue.
Well, the question was also part of the recommendation was one of the recommendations at least was then to also amend the ordinance to allow neighbors to appeal the granting of permits for the goats.
Yes.
We want that to be part of.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how we do with chickens right now, I believe. So I don't see any. I see a difference between chickens and goats.
It will be proximate neighbors, not the person who lives a block away. Okay.
One last clarification, Dan. Was that attachment D?
It's attachment A is
okay.
The resolution.
Okay. I'm good.
I do think, we won't get into it tonight, but I do think the point that that Sammy raised about, the ordinance currently says basically if you raise chickens and eggs, you can't sell the eggs that you raise and that.
Or the spinach you grow, either.
Is that right? I don't know. But anyway, that issue also needs to be revisited at some point. But
do you want to put that on a future agenda?
I'll bring it up at a later.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. All those in favor of Dan's motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously. We have one remaining item.
Is there anything? I don't see any action on this.
On the
Does anyone
sweatshop requirement?
Does anyone have?
You know, I remember I brought this up just because we had heard from Senator Kennard asking if we would review it. But as it states here, this is almost inapplicable, really.
Well, why does it have to be 30,000? Why couldn't it be lower? Durham has a much bigger budget than us.
Yeah. I think the specific question that we were asked was, looking at signing on to the Durham bill, and so that was the response. There wouldn't be anything that would preclude us if the board directed asking us to look at what might be possible at that informal threshold, because the statutes, I believe, are basically silent about what happens in that. Range. So if the board's interested, if you give us a chance over the summer to look at what might be some practical approaches to getting at what I think the board's interest might be.
And that's not one that would require legislative approval. I mean, that's
to my knowledge, no.
I don't think it is. It
would be something, okay. Depending on what you all wanted to do, but I think there's a way to do some practical things.
Years ago, we passed a selective buy-in ordinance against companies that did business in Burma, and it was thrown out by the Supreme Court. We're in court with Boston, and I remember because it was my resolution, and it was just amazing that we were up there. But it got thrown out, and that was quite some time ago. And I've often thought it was really sad when you look at Burma that if those ordinances had been allowed to stand, it could have done a lot of what we did, what was done to help South Africa, but. Is this up against the same kind of thing? Is an anti-sweatshop ordinance, can that run up against the same sort of resistance, legal resistance, that the selective buying ordinance did?
Well, I think it might be part of how it's...
Yeah, I include in my motion that we get an answer to that question.
Yeah. Okay. So it has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying
aye. Who seconded?
I did.
Okay. All right.
What was the motion? I don't know. What was the motion? We're asking the staff to...
To look, give us some suggestions on how to, we might proceed with this and what
in a way that would actually be relevant to the town of Carborough.
Yeah. Yeah. The current proposal was not. Find out about the 30,000.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Great. So
who's,
that
who's hosting the party next Tuesday?
What?
Who's hosting the party next Tuesday?
Now, I am going to be out of town next Tuesday, but I will be thinking about you all. And hopefully, John, are you going to be here next Tuesday?
No, we don't have a meeting. We just canceled our meeting.
Oh, yeah, we canceled it.
Okay.
That was kind of
Sammy
my point.
Is.
We
can
cancel it all together. That's fantastic.
Yeah, this is our last meeting.
So we'll see you in August.
Will we adjourn until August?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed. Not passing the